Blog Talk Radio.
And I feel nice.
That should come fine.
I feel nice. That sugar is fine. So nice. So nice. I got you.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was talking to myself. I had still myself muted. Hello, everyone. Oh, and give me a second, please. Let me do something here. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Ron Rex Show. This is Antoinette, and I cannot tell you where Ron is because I do not know. So, if you give me a second, I will be right with you. And I apologize for the delay.
A magical pill I could administer to everyone on Capitol Hill. You wanna call that thought radical chill? You must not be familiar with the factual deal. Here's a power grab happening right under your nose. Re-education camps around and there's no wonder who goes. Open your mouth and suicide before the story's exposed. Whistleblowers disappear to where nobody knows. Say the wrong thing and your whole career is iffy. American Israeli Public Affairs Committee. The real terrorists in question are getting by you. 9/11 was a blessing according to Netanyahu. It leaves me no choice what to do with the Mossad do and more. By deception, wage war. Your commander in chief don't run the motherfucking thing. You don't get to see the king, just a puppet on the string. Just a little rain, riddling brain. Look at the fleet with the
to the beat of a drum. Forbidden things, we actually carry the debt. Hidden strings with actions of a marionette. It's a pit of ship, an unforgivable prison. True scissors with chipper or invisible prison.
Invisible prison.
Welcome to the Ron Rex Show. And since we already have a caller on the line, hello, George from Firefox News Online Prime Time. I don't have you on. Wait a minute. Yes, I do. George, did you mute yourself out? Well, I don't know what's going on. Oh, okay. Well, area code 214, your line is open. Okay, well, I'll put you on hold and put your hand up when you're ready to talk. Gunslinger. Okay. Gunslinger, you don't want to talk to me? Don't put your hand up. Okay, well, I cannot answer where Ron is. I just see that there was a show that was scheduled, and maybe he's running late or something. I truly do not know. I did not talk to him. So I'm here, but he's not, and so, I don't know. Well, Gunslinger, we can play another song and see where we go with that, because I just don't know.
Pennsylvania juvenile judge has been sentenced to 28 years in prison for accepting millions of dollars in bribes to incarcerate young people in detention centers owned by friends.
1999, the morning after Halloween. The courtroom was jammed like a big can of sardines. Officer Hoss was testifying as to my arrest. But he was testifying and my lawyer made him confess. He said he pulled me over because the exit that I caught was the wrong way. But that was not reflected in the report. He then asserted his probable cause for searching was smelling a drug. But nowhere on my person did they find as much as a nug. He did, however, retrieve what he believed to be illegal weapons after illegally searching my person and seizing the keys to the trunk to collect them. It should have been clear to all in attendance my rights were violated by the law with a vengeance. My defense was way above standard, however
the Honorable Judge Lander banged his gavel with a smug candor. I was convicted of possession of destructive devices with the intent to deliver without a license. Soon as I walked in the door, I put the judge's name in Google. A local paper reported on his Masonic approval. It seems he liked to canoodle with prepubescent pupils. My suspicion quadrupled that I had been bamboozled. I took a few belly breaths and I felt considerably calmer. I thought it was time to get a bit more acquainted with his honor. I saw photos of him with the Kids for Cash judges. He gets a lot of mail from a lot of angry mothers. He sent kids to boot camp for having a pill or pot, and I bet he got the same kickbacks Judge Chivarella got. The only difference is he got the loot and got away, but let me tell you, fella, I can guarantee you not today. The Honorable Philander will answer the allegation if it doesn't satiate the court, there's simply no salvation. His buddy took a million in bribes while destroying lives. Something's fishy here, I think it's gonna get more macabre. Sitting in front of the Criminal Justice Center in a blue Mazda, waiting for Judge Philander to exit the building to follow him to his casa. I see him 6:20. What do you know? It's dark enough to switch the whole plan up and follow him into the parking structure. We got to level F. He turned around, startled, looking at me. So I started reaching for the devil's breath. I blew 2 grams of scopolamine into his face. Put the bag over his head, gun to his waist. The judge to take me to his residence right away. He put the Lincoln in drive and then commenced without a delay. I brought a 45 in case the plan went astray, but the Burundanga had him ready to do whatever I say. But for good measure and my own protection, I needed to know that we were headed in the correct direction. Upon suggestion, he emptied his pockets outright. I saw his ID, Upper Marion, that sounds about right. I was familiar with the area, so yes indeed, when we arrived in his driveway, I was more than pleased. Here's your keys, let us go unlock the door. Entering the vestibule, I was cocksure. Phil, relax, let me get you some pie. Would you like a drink? I see you got some Rittenhouse rye. That's my favorite brand. Is that a picture of you and Kobe shaking hands? Phil, you never told me you were a Lakers fan. My first order of business was to obtain permission to his laptop so I could nullify my bogus conviction. The good judge gladly gave me absolute access to ujsportal.pacourts.us. Whereupon I simply typed my name into a box. Hit delete, shit was sweet, it's like I just rewound the clock. Then I exited the browser in a groovy style. Click computer, searched his hard drive for all movie files. 322 results, arranged them all by size. Clicked the biggest file and I just could not believe my eyes. It was Judge Phil Lander in the flesh. Saved the leather suit, leather whip, leather boots, leather vest. Dancing around the village people, it was not so cute. On top of that, the young man with them seemed to be a prostitute. Something made me want to hurt the judge initially, but I concluded he'd already hurt himself officially. I opened his Outlook Express and attached the file to all his contacts. Clicked send and it took a while. Scopolamine was wearing off, so I had to knock him out. Crushed up 10 grams of alprazolam and stuffed it in his mouth. Called the cops from the landline in his home. Took the keys to his town car and I was gone. I left his amateur video on pause front and center. What an adventure when the police enter.
Millions of dollars in kickbacks in exchange for sending kids to private detention centers.
You got 28 years behind bars for your crime. It wouldn't have been right if you got 29. Man, you should have got 80. Mainly for what you did to that lady. You got 28 years behind bars for your crime. It wouldn't have been right if you got 29, man. This shit is so crazy. What you did to that lady? Murder the baby.
Well, hello, gentlemen, and welcome to the Ron Rex Show. Okay, Gunslinger said he has a story to tell in a few, but he's going to get something to eat. Getting a bite to eat. And I have on the line with me Firefox News George.
Hello.
I said that wrong. George of Firefox News.
I've been called worse things, Antoinette. I've been called worse things. I mean, let's look. I've been in this business with broadcasting for over six and a half years.
Yeah.
And
wow.
In broadcasting, as long as they don't call me too late for supper, it's all good.
Okay.
I mean, Hold on a second here. What do you want, Rabbit?
Pardon me, Doc, but don't you think Antoinette might want to talk to me once in a while?
Yes.
No,
I
don't think so, Bugs. Come on now. She doesn't want to talk to a Looney Tune.
She talks to you, doesn't she?
I beg your pardon, Bugs?
Well, Doc, you do talk a lot. You do talk a lot. I'm a radio host. Go away, go away, go away. Don't find a carrot somewhere. Sheesh.
The noiva, some people's. Or rabbits in this case. Okay.
Well,
a little bit of fun never hurts.
Huh?
No, it doesn't. And I'm still waiting.
I haven't forgotten, my dear. It's just that I've been kind of busy with medical problems in my life the last few days. I was in the hospital on Tuesday.
Oh, my.
Well,
I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad to hear that you're home and you're not in the hospital.
Well, my dear, I volunteer on Tuesdays for a place called People Incorporated. And what had happened was I'm sitting at my desk and my abdomen began to get severely distended. So badly that it started worrying one of the staff members. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the least bit concerned because I figure eventually it must be gas. I'll either burp or fart, whichever comes first, and it'll be gone.
Yeah.
But obviously that didn't happen. So she took me to the hospital. Mm-hmm. She not only took me to the hospital, she insisted I go.
Yeah.
So to put her mind at ease, this young lady is a very sweet person. To put her mind at ease, I went to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
After getting x-rays, blood work, and all this other stuff, the doctor comes in and says, "Well, Mr. Sinzer, I've got really good news, but I've also got some bad news." I said, "Doc, give me the bad news first." He said, "We don't know what's causing it, so we don't know how to fix it." Okay, what's the good news?
Isn't that wonderful to hear?
Good news is you have no blockages, no kind of obstructions or anything like that. So you're pretty much empty. I'm like, I could have told you that. My stomach's been growling for the last 5 minutes. Now, this young lady is sitting there. She would not leave the room when the doctor went to examine me.
Oh, my.
She was that
concerned. She brought
concerned.
You there. She was going to make sure that you were okay, that you were not leaving there until you were fully checked out.
She made sure of that and then some. And she would ask several questions a dozen times over. At one point, when she got up to make a phone call, the nurse leaned over to me and said, "Mr. Sinzer, is that your wife?" And I started laughing. I said, "No, she's not my wife. I am happily divorced." And she goes, "Well,
she sounds like a keeper, George."
She sounds like a keeper, except for one minor catch. Because I'm also a client of this agency, I cannot, neither she or I can date. Company policy.
Oh, well, you know what? Tell her to drop your case where she's not. Oh, you know, involved with your case
and
then date her.
If she drops my case, I lose my home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, just don't tell them. Yes.
Well, it's kind of hard to keep a secret around that place. I'll tell you right now. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, and by the time I've said that, it's too late, unfortunately, I spent the better part of the day in the hospital. And she stayed with me, right?
Well, that was good.
My abdomen, in the meantime, is about the size of a gigantic beach ball. And I'm looking at her, and I'm saying, "Look, if anything was going to go wrong, it would have. I'm not going to be sitting here in a hospital, and all of a sudden my belly goes, so you have nothing to worry about. You heard the doctor."
Yeah.
Well, the doctor comes in and says, All right, Mr. Sinzer, unfortunately for us, but fortunately for you, we're going to discharge you. Though I do suggest you go home and at least try to rest.
Yeah.
And, well, there was not much I could do at that point because it was after 5 o'clock and the agency was closed for the day.
Yeah.
So I go home. She comes up to me, gives me a hug, and says, call me Monday if you're feeling up to it, and I'll come and pick you up to go in Tuesday morning.
Aw.
And which is what she does. You know, I call her on Monday to arrange for the Tuesday morning ride to the agency.
Yes.
So she turns around and she says, oh, and by the way, and she starts patting me on the stomach, and she goes, by the way, if Junior here doesn't get any better soon, I've got a nice big pin cushion. We can select a pin from any one of them and let the air out. I busted out laughing. I said, "You really are a peach. You know that?" She goes, "Well, I'd rather be an apple than a peach because I love apples better than peaches." And I'm sitting there laughing even harder. She says, "Please don't laugh so hard, Georgie. Your belly's shaking. You're like Santa Claus." I said, "Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not that jolly at the moment." Well, her daughter, 5 years old, the sitter calls up. The daughter's wondering where her mother is. She puts her daughter on speakerphone. And I only met the child once. And the child, very respectful, says, "Hi, Mr. Sinzer. Mommy says you're sick. Are you feeling better?" And I said, "Yes, little one, I'm feeling much better, thank you." Yes. And she goes, "Oh, goody! Does that mean we get when I come over to Mommy's job on Tuesday, we can play chutes and ladders?"
Aww.
I was like, "Well, as long as I don't get too many phone calls, I guess we can." Right?
Oh,
I mean, this little jewel, she is so sweet. Well, before she went to talk to her mother, she says, "Mr. Sinzer, how come you and Mommy don't go out?
Aww.
I said, "We did go out. We went out of the office and went into a doctor's office." And she goes,
"You know what she meant.
But you're sick. That's why." You know, and she's so innocent. And I said, "Well, I think I better let your mom talk to you before I monopolize the poor phone call here." And she goes, "Oh, you don't have to go, Mr. Sinzer."
Aww.
And I said, "Yes, I do, because your mommy's got to come home to you. So I'm going to let your mommy go." Well, as her mother's walking out the door, she puts the phone on mute and says, "Who says you don't have a way with children?"
Yeah, see?
Well, what was it? Thursday, I get a phone call here at the house. And it was my friend Jen. She calls up and she says, "I have a very little person here who would like to speak to Bugs Bunny."
Aw.
And I'm like, I knew I shouldn't have done that with her. So I went,
"Well, you know, that attracts
what's up,
yeah,
little one?" Right? I did like that, right? And she goes,
"Yeah.
Hey, Bugs, can you tell George to come over my house to play?"
Aww.
Now, they live several towns away, and I have no transportation. So I turn around, and I went, "Fluffering fluckatath. Sorry, little one, but my friend without a car, you see." And she turns around and she says, "Oh, darn."
Aww.
So I went, "Now be very, very quiet. George is about to say something." And I turn around and I went, "Now, little one, I'll tell you what. You're coming over Tuesday to the office with your mom, so make sure you got the chutes and ladders game ready."
Yeah.
Her mother said that she she tried to pack the Chutes and Ladders game in her school backpack. Her school backpack is smaller than the box. So I said, I've got an idea. When you go in Friday, on your way to work, stop by my office, mm-hmm. which is my house, because I do the radio show here. And I handed her my big black army duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
I said, tell her to put it in this. I know she'll bring that in because she knows that it's my favorite duffel bag, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Tuesday morning, I got a feeling I'm going to be sitting at my desk. My supervisor is in the office directly behind me, and there's a sliding glass window, kind of like a reception window.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's going to be sitting right there watching me play Chutes and Ladders with one of the staff members' children. I have a feeling I know what my boss is going to say. Are you having fun yet, kids?
Aww.
See, that's the one thing.
That is so sweet.
That's one thing about me that most people don't realize. I love working with children. During the summertime back in my hometown, I used to work with summer camps. One mm-hmm. year, I worked with children. You know, I worked with disabled children. At a summer camp.
Uh-huh.
I worked with them for the whole summer. Antoinette, I'm telling you right now, that was the most rewarding summer camp job I ever had in my life. This one kid, he was 16 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's, good grief, probably in his earlier mid-30s by now.
Yes.
But he looks at me and he says, hey, Mr. Sinzer, I'm having trouble with my power chair. Can you help me out?
Aww.
Because a friend of mine who has cerebral palsy has a motorized mm-hmm. wheelchair just like his.
Yeah.
In fact, it was the same exact model at the time.
Oh, okay.
So I go up to the chair and he's sitting in the chair and he goes, it's not moving. The batteries are fully charged, but it won't go anywhere.
Aww.
I said, well, I'll tell you what. Let me move you over to the picnic table here for a second. So I pick him up, move him over to the picnic table.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately unlatch these two hinges, these two latches that lock the chair, that lock the seat in place, and I flip up the chair, and I see the problem almost immediately. Apparently, when he was riding through, one of the battery connections was, the terminal was loose. And it popped off the battery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, see? Simple fix. So I said, let me go get some tools. And I'm going to go get some tools, and I'll be right back. I called over one of the counselors. I said, just sit with Mikey here. I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
I was only gone 30 seconds. I come back. Mikey's gone. Chair's there, but Mikey's gone.
Oh, nice.
I look over about maybe a couple of feet away, and here's mm-hmm. Mikey in a manual chair.
Oh, okay.
Playing basketball.
Oh.
And I'm like, hey, you forgot me.
Oh.
So I turn, I hook up his battery back up, I tighten up the connections, make sure they're good and tight. I sit down in his chair and I motor it over to him, and I said, hey, Mikey, would you rather use this? And he goes, oh, finally, this manual chair is hurting my butt. But what do I tell you? I love working with kids, but this kid, Mikey, honest to God, Antoinette, he was a trip.
Aww.
He knew exactly who to go to whenever there was a certain and specific problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
So
that is good.
You know, children, I can gravitate to. I mean, look, I'm 51 years old, but I still have that childlike mentality in me that mm-hmm. says, "Okay, so what? You're 51. Big deal. Enjoy life." Work with children, help them to have a great time, and you'll feel good on the inside. Your outside may look like crap, but your inside's going to feel like $1,000.
Yeah, and that is true, because that's what them little people do to you. They wear you out, make you tired, but always feel better when you're with them.
Oh, these children always wore me out. At the end of the day, I'd go home, and there were a couple of nights I didn't even make dinner. I was so tired, I just sat down on the couch and fell asleep.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I heard a noise, and I'm trying to figure out where the noise coming from in my house.
Now, I wonder what became of Ron Reck.
I do not know. I tried the calling, but, I didn't get anything. You know, it said his phone's not accepting calls at this time, so I don't know what's going on, if they're having a storm up in that area or not. But, give me 1 second, George, and Gunslinger, 1 second. Iggy, I have to correct something that I said last night. I checked it. I said that it was the Catholic religion that, the UAME church came from. And I was wrong. It's the Methodist church that they separated. And it wasn't Abraham Jones. It was Absalom Jones. Absalom Jones. It was him and another guy. And I forgot but I had to go back and check my memory on that one.
Yeah. Antoinette, by the way, the church that separated from the Catholic Church was the Episcopal Church.
Okay, so maybe it was. I need to go back and check again.
Well, and the reason I know that is because I'm an Episcopalian.
Okay,
I was raised in the Episcopal
because,
Church.
Yeah, because I know it was because black people couldn't take communion. And that's the reason why, it's here in Delaware, it started. And they broke away, and now it's the UAME, which has been, I think, Lord, for maybe 100 and some years.
Well, my sister, older sister, Louise, is a member of the United Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. And I remember a conversation that Louise and I had many years ago where she and I had this disagreement.
Yes.
About the Episcopal Church and its separation.
Mm-hmm.
Even though my mother and my father took me to the Episcopal Church. My father originally was a member of the Methodist Church, but then he came over to the Episcopal Church with Mom and I.
Yes.
He did not know about the separation between the Catholic the Roman Catholic Church and the Episcopal Church, which is considered which is part of the Anglican Church, by the way. Where the Roman Catholic Church has the Pope, the Episcopal Church has the core bishops, right? So Louise kept trying to insist that the Episcopal Church was a breakaway from the Methodist Church. And I said, no. Read the history. And and unfortunately, she wouldn't do that.
Yeah, we
so one day
like that.
Until one day I got her a hard copy of the history. Mm-hmm. I went to the library and got a printout because at the time I didn't have a computer.
Yeah.
So I brought it to her and I said, "Now, Louise, read this." It was only about 12 or 13 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat back and she read it. And she looked at me, smiled and said, "I'm really happy to be proven wrong."
Oh, well, that's good.
I didn't want to prove you're wrong. I was just trying to help you to know that, your information was a little askew.
Yes.
So, it happens.
Yeah, it does. And, my mind. And it was the other person, it was Peter Spencer. It started in 1865 by some congregations of the African Union Church founded by Peter Spencer in 1813. In May 2012, I'm just going to say UME, church entered into full communion with African Methodist Episcopal Church. Okay, I didn't know that they all went together now. Okay, but I know. Okay.
Well, there's so much sifting to go through when it comes to the information regarding how some churches separated and became another one and another one and so on. The Episcopal Church has had actually only two separations in its collective history. The Methodist Church has had several dozen that I'm to understand.
Yeah. But churches are like that now. Sad to say, where so many of them are breaking up. Okay, well, Gunslinger, whenever you're ready, your line is open. He's going to talk about.
Buddy.
Oh, he's going to talk about. Okay, your line is open, Gunslinger.
Oh, okay. Well, I was wondering if you want to start the discussion on the city ordinances.
Yeah.
Now, see, Ron had that scheduled, and I didn't look them up because I checked it this afternoon when I came in, and then I got lazy.
Well, I got a hell of a story pertaining to that.
Okay. Okay, well, go for it.
All right. Well, this actually happened to me now. All right. So I can...
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
This happened started around May of 2004, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Before I got illegally foreclosed on, I had a $250,000 estate, 5 acres, 3,200 square foot, 3-bedroom, 2-bath brick house, and an 1,800 square foot job, okay? Well, I had a buddy of mine that had a mobile home on my property. We had what was left of the original 10.5 acres. It was 5 acres. And it was in the city of DeSoto, Texas. I'll tell you exactly the sorry bastards that they are. And we've always been kind of at war with this city, okay, because my dad was at war with them, and they tried to take us into the city annexed and all this garbage. And, of course, they never did give us anything. All they gave us water and garbage pickup. Oh, big deal, right? But anyway, well, I had a buddy of mine that had this mobile home on the property, and, well, long story short, he decided not to pay for it, so they was going to attempting to repossess it, right? Well, I backed the buddy of mine up at gunpoint. I chased cops off my property at gunpoint, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And but they finally waylaid us in May of 2004, okay? They kidnapped us at the front of the road because my house was set 200 feet off the driveway. I mean, the driveway was 200 feet long. Okay. And they already had the crew over the little hill north of me already set up, okay, to get this mobile home. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they kidnapped us, there's like 4 or 5 Dallas County constables, and they already had the crew set up and everything. Well, they took us to jail on a, when you go against a court order, what do you call it? Contempt of court.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the first 3 months. Now, as soon as we left, a short time later, the city inspector came down there and started writing tickets after ticket after ticket. Illegally parking on your grass.
Okay.
Junk and debris, which I lived in an agricultural section. Okay, not in a residential. It was agricultural.
Right.
Fields, grass, waist high, on 3 sides of me. Okay?
Yeah.
Illegally parking on your grass, trash and debris, and there was one other, and they had about 4 tickets on each one. So it totaled 21 tickets.
Wow.
I didn't have the money. I'm disabled. I can't work.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on food stamps since 1997. Okay. I was out of money at the time, at that time, because it was after my mom passed away in 2000. I was broke. I had only had a little rent on another little trailer house that was on the property at the time, too. So here comes the city code inspector. Started writing all these stuff. Okay. And I didn't have the money. Didn't have the money decided. I couldn't even afford a damn attorney. So they all went to warrant. So I had 21 warrants for my arrest.
Wow.
Yeah. So total between all that, up until I got illegally foreclosed on in 2008, I spent, well, about a year after, because I got, there were still remainders from the last time I went to jail here.
Yeah.
I think it was in 2009, and I spent 84 days in Waxahachie Crowbar Hotel.
Hmm.
That was 3 months. So total, because of these bullshit city ordinances, I spent at least 4.5 months in jail. Total.
Oh, my goodness.
With fines almost $10,000.
And they took your property.
Well, yeah, because they took the property because I'm disabled and I couldn't pay the taxes. Okay, that's why they took the property. They foreclosed on the property. I couldn't afford their theft rent of almost $5,000 a year. Okay. And this is residential. This is not in high-class residential areas. This is out in agriculture. You know, you'd see rabbits out there in the field, and, you know, a couple of coyotes, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is a bunch of bullshit that these damn cities do. And,
yeah,
it sounds
like UN Agenda 21, the land grab. I put, if you look in the chat room, I put a link in there for you.
Yeah. So
where
they're doing things. It is Agenda 21 because they don't want you to own private property, because if you own private property, you've got power.
Right.
Land is power. Okay. And if
Even though you never own property.
Yeah. And if they take it away from you, well, then you have no power.
Yes.
Believe that? because they foreclosed on it because I couldn't pay their theft charges, you know, property taxes.
Yes.
So,
We also have on the line with us area code 914. Area code 914, your line is open. Can you tell me?
Hello, I'm a first-time caller.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, I'd like to discuss some things. There's a talk show host, a lady that's always on. Her name is Antoinette, and she was very, very sweet. She's nice with the people, and I wanted to discuss something about her. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
Yes.
Antoinette, it's me, Mike, in New York. I'm just pulling your chain.
I said, it must be Mike.
All right, I'll
just... Look,
well,
I
hold
up your line way
too
soon. Doesn't that let you know that I recognize the number?
Get out of here.
Was.
Come on now. I figured Ron gets all the trolls. You never get any. I wanted you to have one. But I don't make a good troll. I know. I didn't do it right.
Well, unfortunately, Mike, she recognizes your phone number.
That's not fair. That's
so bad. Nice try, though.
I tried.
Yeah. Look, at first I was all set to write troll until you said co-host named Antoine. And then I looked again at the number. I'm like, wait a minute, I've seen this before. And I was like, wait a minute, that's Mike.
I knew it. I knew you. I said, well, maybe she'll see the number. Well, that's all right. Anyway, hi, Gunn. Hi, George.
Hi, y'all.
Wrapping up my night. That's why I missed your show, George. Work, yeah? What are you going to do? We're all going to work.
It happens. Hey, Gunslinger, in what you were talking about with the ordinances and stuff, you know, back when I lived in Peekskill, there were quite a few ordinances that made absolutely no sense at times. And I think one of the biggest problems I faced, actually all of Peekskill faces at the time, even today, are the ordinances in regards to parking. The parking ordinances, and one of the things that used to drive me up a wall, especially on streets where they really didn't put the signs up, is during the winter time when they have the alternate side of the street parking regulations. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I remember one side street that I parked on. I was supposed to park on the other side of the street, didn't know it, and I was visiting a family member, and I come out, I go to walk toward my car, and here's a police car pulling up alongside my car. Now I was at the time my car was the only car on the street. So I'm like, what the heck is this all about? So I waltz over, you know, and I said, hey, patrol officer, what's going on? He goes, this your car? I said, yeah. He goes, you know, it's alternate side of the street parking? I said, where are the signs? He said, where are the, and he looked and he says, oh, for crying out loud. You're right, there's no signs here. But there's still an ordinance in regards to parking alternate side of the street in the city of Peekskill. You're supposed to be on the other side of the street, sir. And I said, well, now if it's not marked, how am I supposed to know that?
Right.
You're absolutely right.
I could see in a city like where you lived, okay, if you park on the street, okay, I can see, you know, you got to have a little bit of regulation there. Or people be parking right in the middle of the damn street, and you create a traffic jam. Okay, that's perfectly understandable. But when you park on your own private property, not even on the street, and the bastards come in there and write you tickets because you're illegally parking on your grass. And this is what the damn ordinance says. This is what the stupid-ass ordinance says. You can't park on your grass. Isn't it wonderful? And not only those ordinances, but like fireworks ordinance, for example. Can't shoot fireworks within the city limits. Okay. Now, if you live in a what we call track houses, you know what track houses are. They're houses right next to each other. You can spit out the window and hit your neighbor. That's what we call a track house down here. Okay. But if you live on a open acreage like I did, okay, what's a few firecrackers? Who's that going to hurt? And I got them. Well, they, like I said, I hated them as much as they hated me. I probably hated them more than they hated me. But anyway, okay. I go up there about halfway up my driveway. Like I said, it was 200 feet long, concrete driveway, and I start shooting bottle rockets off. And this cop would pull out of the residential neighborhood across the street. Because the street dead end right into my yard, and I just sat there and I'd wave at him as I launched a rocket off. He just waved back. You know why? Because I was wearing my .357 Magnum. That's why.
Oh.
So sometimes you need to meet force with force. Okay. But I just wave up there. Hey, you want to come down here? I mean, come on. Let's have a talk, Mr. So-called city policy enforcer, because that's all you are, is a damn security guard. That's all you are. Okay? Cops are not law.
Yeah.
Because the Constitution did not set up the police. They set up the Sheriff's Department, yes. These municipal cops, no. And you know why? Because they're not hard. Police, the city cops are not hard, or elected on. They're hard by the city manager. You don't believe me? Go call your city manager and ask him. Where do you get your police officers at? Oh, we hire them. So then they go call your sheriff and say, well, where do you get your deputies? Well, I hire them, but you vote for me, and I'm responsible for them. So in a city, you're not. There's nobody responsible for nobody. It's just lawlessness, basically. And, boy, let me tell you, I'll even tell you another little interesting story real short, real fast. Okay? Even before
One minute, Gunslinger, could you give me 1 second, please? We have a caller on hold. Okay, y'all. Hello, Derek Cooper.
Hello.
Your line is open. Hello.
How are you, right?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you for joining us on the Round Rec Show.
Yes, right. I don't know if you was halfway through a conversation. It sounded like you was. Do you want to let that man finish his story before I start banging down about this?
Yeah, you had your hand up, so I just didn't want you to be on hold for too long, so I just was letting you in if you wanted to be a part of the conversation or if you just wanted to listen.
No, I do have a question, but I think you should let the man finish his story first. But I'm looking here, and it says, if your dog or cat shits in your yard, your government says, fuck you, pay me. And then you say, if your grass, hang on, advert pops up. I don't need to read it to you. You wrote it. But yeah, let the man finish his story, because I was quite interested.
Yes. Well, he was going into another one, but yes, of course, we're going to let him do that.
Oh, you'll
okay,
love this one.
Okay, Gunslinger, I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear.
Okay, this is on the, this occurred probably in late part of 97, maybe 98, somewhere in that neck. And like I said, we've had problems with the city of DeSoto, Texas. Years, you know, the water would go off, and they would never do anything about it. We never did get sewer out there. Okay. And, you know, it was always these, you know, well, you go to this property tax. We're paying property tax. Well, what the hell we're getting? Nothing. Except the business bending over. Well, we went out there, and they did, you know, I moved the trailer in and out. It was years before that. And it was just a swap out. Just a trailer swap out. Well, I guess it wasn't. Mm-hmm. This was late 97. That was when, right after my sister died, because she just got married, and I bought her a perfectly good repo trailer. I think it was like $40,000. Went in there, good credit, just signed my name to it and got it. But anyway, well, after she died, you know, I couldn't afford it. You know, I was already broke and already run out of money, so you know, I had to quit because of my medical condition. But anyway,
yeah.
We had to let that trailer go back because I couldn't afford the payments on it. But anyway, well, they pissed me off. They said they were going to charge me with illegally erecting a structure on your own property. Okay, I said, okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, because you need a building permit.
Yeah, well, you had to have a building permit, electrical permit, plumbing permit, all that bullshit. It's just money to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about money.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I went out there, and I got me a pair of pants, a shirt, sewed them together, filled them full of beer cans, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I got on my little wagon, I pulled behind my little lawnmower there, and I pulled it up there with a couple of 4x4s, and I made me a hangman's noose up there at the road. I had two big old telephone poles at the road where they brought the high voltage down on the property. Okay, so I built me a hangman's noose, and I put a bag over this dummy. It was an effigy, okay? And I simply wrote the word mayor above it. It made the front page in the local news. They're probably still talking about it today. I'm serious. This actually occurred. I had people. I could sit there in my shop door, and I could have a big old rolling door thing about 15 by 12 feet high. But anyway, I could sit there and watch people drive by. They stop. They back up and start taking pictures of it. We even got on the phone to the mayor of the city of DeSoto at the time. In fact, I still got the recording somewhere. He said, oh, my God, what have I done to you, Mr. Oh, my God, just shaking in his boots. Because all them bastards are corrupt up there. On any city, I don't care what it is. They're either into drugs, prostitution, pedophilia, name it. They're into it, okay?
Yeah.
And that year, that mayor lost the election.
Oh, my.
Boy, you don't want to piss off the gunslinger. Okay?
No, I can see. Don't mess with you.
I know. So that was an interesting story. I mean, I guarantee you they're still talking over at the city hall. They're still talking about it to this day. They'll never forgive me.
So
that was crazy. You've got to use these force. You've got to use force with force. I mean, when I put the word mayor up there, I didn't say the mayor of DeSoto. It just simply said mayor.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Okay? It could have been mayor of Egypt. Okay, for that matter. But why did that mayor call and shake it in his boots?
It was because he's the mayor of McDonald's. You know that's why.
Because they're shaking in their boots because, oh, my God, what did you discover about us? Did you see our drug deal or something?
They don't want that to be. I'm sorry.
But I guarantee you that day,
You just absolutely
fall
over,
laughing.
That's so funny.
Mm.
Well, I'm glad you did that.
Ron, is it? Ron Next, that's not your name, is it?
No, Ron Reck is not with us at this moment. But this is Antoinette. I'm the co-host of the show.
Antoinette, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Did you write the portfolio to this
for this episode? No, I didn't.
No,
Ron,
I didn't think you
Ron
did, because it doesn't look
it.
Like a female's wrote this. I don't think so. So you've been dropped in the shit, have you?
Pardon me?
Have you been dropped in the shit?
Have I?
Yeah, have you been dropped in the shit, or have you chosen to take on this episode live by
yourself?
Well,
I chose to take it on because I knew that George was going to be here with me, and Iggy, and Mike, and Gunslinger, and you were going to call, and I was going to have road ties, so I knew I was not going to be alone.
Oh, very good, very good. I can tell you're a pro.
Yes, I knew that we were going to have brothers here with us. Pardon
yeah.
me?
Well,
and you know why they call me the gunslinger?
Why do they call you the gunslinger?
Well, one thing, I was born and raised and still live in Texas, and I got a .357 Magnum on my side right now. So they call me the gunslinger.
Yeah, very
well,
impressed.
That's a good reason, huh?
Yeah, she's very impressed by that.
It's the peacekeeper, and that's what those things are, and that is what everybody in America, every law-abiding citizen, should do, is openly wear their weapon. Don't you might think crime might drop a little bit. You think?
Yeah.
You know it would, and it's already been proven by the FBI's own numbers that the states that they have even CHL, which is concealed handgun license, which I had. And in the states that have open carry, their crime rate in their counties and states have dropped dramatically.
Well, we have open carry. It's always been open carry. And
I've
seen where crime rate is starting to go up now.
Are you telling me that
it's
serious?
In the water.
Are you seriously telling me that in your country, you boys can walk around with a gun hanging out of your belts? As you
yeah, if you're
around.
Over in England, you can't. Y'all aren't even allowed to have guns in England, correct?
No, we're not. No, because guns kill people. You're not allowed to have them. You're not allowed to carry around any offensive weapon. That includes any.
Let me add this. This country, I don't know where you're from, but the United States of America was made by three things: God, guts, and guns. Okay, this is what built this country. During World War II, I don't know if nobody's really old enough today here that really remembers it, except there are only a few veterans that are left. The admiral of that Japanese fleet that invaded Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, okay, was interviewed later, and they asked him, well, why didn't you just go ahead and invade the mainland? Hell, you was right there. You had this whole fleet of warships out there. You know what his response was? He said, because if I would have invaded the mainland of the United States of America, there would be a gun behind every blade of grass. Think about that.
Yeah, well, I'll agree with you there, because what I've heard is on a different radio show, I've heard that one of your states that have been disarmed already, I'm not sure which one it is, but one of your states that have been disarmed, and someone asked them the question, what would you do now that your state has been disarmed? And what would you do if you would have been invaded? And they said that they would go to, how can I say this without sounding, I'll just say it. They would go to the blacks. They would go to the gangs. They would go to the gangsters. They would hide in there because they know that them boys can look after themselves.
Well, it's just like here in the United States, by their own numbers.
Sorry to jump in. I just heard that. I couldn't help it. Hi, caller. My name is Mike. I'm like I'm into a lot of World War II here, but if, okay, you know your British history and everything else, think back in the beginning, think back in Dunkirk, think back with the Home Guard. What happened after Dunkirk? Do you remember?
Well, we got our ass kicked and we pulled out to lick our...
How much gear, how much kit, you guys call it kit over there, how much kit did you leave behind on the mainland?
A hell of a lot.
I've got a British mess kit, 1917 or 1916 mark, dated, broad arrow proofed, reissued for World War II, redated.
What,
they were taking
Dunkirk?
World War I equipment and redating it and reissuing it because they were so short of equipment. Now, they got the Home Guard. How do you equip the Home Guard when you don't have enough firearms?
I'll tell you how we equipped the Home Guard, my brother. We resorted back to our mind tricks. If we had a tank rolling up the road, what we would do is we'd get a house plate and we'd turn the house plate upside down and put it on the road. When the tank's rolling up the road and they see a house plate turned upside down on the road, they think that's a mine. That's going to slow them down. That's what
we've
done.
But did they tell you anything about how many arms were collected and donated? And they were put on loan, is what they technically called it, where every state in the United States, people were donating shotguns, rifles, pistols, whatever they could, and shipping them over to Great Britain. So the people,
Did you know anything about that? Yeah,
because
my granddad told me a lot.
The people had been disarmed.
He told me a hell of a lot. Yeah.
The people had been disarmed, and what were they doing? They were coming to us to borrow them. And we donated tons of firearms. I mean, some of them were actually returned. Some of them did return. Some of them weren't. But, you got to expect that. Wartime, a lot was lost on all sides. But that's what comes down as an important lesson. If you value your freedom, you value your liberty, you train the people and you teach people so that they're responsible with the firearms and you don't have issues. When you're in the cities and you don't have a gun culture anymore and you let the liberals take over, now look what's going on in England right now. You had those retards, those fools, the Islamic, whatever, jihadists that hacked a British soldier to death. What a disgrace. I'll tell you what, if there was anybody with a concealed weapon here in the United States and we saw something like that, it wouldn't have made it past two or three blows.
Well, you also got to understand, too, that, there is, you can look up the old numbers on the FBI website. There is a high amount of shootings in this country, okay, no doubt. I won't doubt that, okay? In a population of, 340-something million people, okay? Gee whiz, you think, okay? But if you go out there and break those numbers down, you'll see most of that, I would say at least 90%, is gang-related. Gangbang, shooting each other.
I saw one ratio where they said if you took out Los Angeles, Chicago, all the major cities, New York, if you took all of those numbers out of the equation, our gun issues would be minor. It's the cities, the mentality in the cities, the gangs, it's true. But I mean, England right now, I heard there's a resurgence where people want their gun rights back. Because people have been put in jail for like stupid stuff. There was a guy.
Look at Australia, okay? It was 20 years, I think. I just read an article a couple of days ago. It was 20 years when they gave up all their guns, okay, for self-defense or whatever the gun laws is over there now. The crime in Australia has skyrocketed.
Well, people still have guns. Even in England, you can still apply for a license. It's a lot more involved than it used to be. But now what they're facing in England is they've got people that are working out of the basements and illegal homemade factories where they're taking air guns, dummy guns, they're converting them into single-shot weapons. So you're never, ever going to completely take guns out of society. It'll never work. There are always going to be illegal ones.
They'll always get their hands on the guns. I don't care what it is, where it is, or what position that you're in. You think they go to a background check? You think they go to a legitimate gun store? No. They get it off the black market or in an alley somewhere.
England's dealing with that a lot right now. England has a lot of illegal weapons that are coming in from other countries, and a lot of them being made homemade, like zip guns. What was your name? Caller, what was your name?
My name's Derek, and
Derek.
I would like to know. Yeah.
All right, cool.
I would like to know where you're getting your information from, because
I'm a historian.
Yeah.
So the thing about the Lend-Lease, and I mean, even the Lend-Lease where we did the number four Enfields, you know, the number four Enfields that we made in Savage Arms, Chicopee, Mass, and we loaned them to England in World War II, and also the P-17. That was the P-14 that we modified for 30-06. The P-14, we were making them in World War I because the British, you couldn't make enough of the SMLEs. And for World War I, you didn't have enough rifle. You didn't have the production capability, and you came to us, and we were producing P-14s for you, the Enfields. So, I mean, as a historian and everything, facts are facts. You can't deviate from them. And I keep track on a lot of the news over in England on what's going on with the zip guns, with the basement, the factories where they're making them, and the knives, the knifings in England have skyrocketed. Kids and criminals are carrying knives now.
Well, the knifings have skyrocketed because we've got all these fucking immigrants coming across.
Exactly,
because,
and
it's not right. We're not doing it.
I know you guys aren't, but they're bringing them in like crazy, and the government's giving them whatever they want.
Yeah,
common sense is gone from these governments, not just here in the U.S. England and Europe are even facing it.
Yeah, it's a mass invasion, isn't it? By jihadists. Mass invasion. We got UKIP party here now. We got the UKIP party. You heard of the UKIP?
No, I don't know what that group is.
Well, no, UKIP. Spelled UKIP. The UKIP party.
Oh, I don't know who they are.
It's more like a British nationalist party. They're not racist. They're just trying to put a stop, trying to stamp their foot down and say, no more, you know, we've had enough. You know, there's so many immigrants coming, and they're all from Iraq, Kazakhstan,
Turkey,
anything that ends in Stan.
Albania.
Yeah, they're all coming here because they think that we lavish in a fucking river of gold. You know, which is not true. You know, and they're all here, and they're coming over, and they're pouring over. You know, and it is a problem. You know, it's getting quite over the top, but it's not to the point where we're going underground and making guns. And
No. There are factories on the news. There are people that are making. They're illegal gun factories, and they're home making. They're modifying. And I saw one report from the police. They were telling people, don't buy these. You don't know if they're safe. I mean, you can't take a blank firing pistol. Now, somebody's going to modify it, drill it out, and you're going to fire a live round in it? How do you know that that's actually safe?
I've heard of the pod gun, you know. Anyone can make a gun. All you need is a shell. You can make a pod gun, you know.
And they're also reactivating, you know, the deactivated ones? Like in England, it's a big sport. People collect deactivated firearms, but they have to be officially certified by the government that this is a deactivated weapon.
Yeah,
well,
but see, the thing is that we don't need to protect ourselves. We don't need to do it. We don't need to. You know, you got to chillax, man. You sound like you're talking about the end of the world down on it.
No. But see, over here in the U.S., we respect and we cherish our safety and the ability to defend ourselves. And when you're dealing in the cities or anything else, I mean, I've got a crack house, a few houses away from me. I've got a crack house. And the police are watching, and I know they are. I know eventually it's going to be cleaned out, but I know what walks by my front door. If I open up my front door, is it smart to walk out there thinking of unicorns and rainbows, or to be prepared?
See, to me, mate. From what I've heard from you, right? Maybe your great great grandparents have moved to your country, maybe from Ireland, Scotland, somewhere like that. You've been promised the promised land, the land of the free. You know, a couple of generations down the line, you've realised, hang on, you know, we're not free. Mm-hmm. You know, and it sounds to me like you've a little bit over the top there. You know, it's not as bad as what it sounds like. You know, it's all good. I mean, especially in our country.
Well, you haven't gone. I mean, you've had some riots and stuff, but you got to remember, you're speaking with myself. I'm somebody. I was in the LA riots. I was there. I was living in Los Angeles. I saw the Rodney King riots. I saw the O.J. Simpson, the riots. So I've been through it. Now, would I have the same attitude that people say, well, I don't need to have a fire extinguisher because I'll never have a fire in my house? Or is it smarter to have a fire extinguisher and say, you know what, someday I might have a fire in my house.
It's smart not to need one in the first place.
But you've got to be, you know that if you live in a house, a wooden structure or something, even if it's brick or anything, there's always a chance of having a fire. You can never predict what's going to happen. It's always better to be prepared for everything that might be coming at you. Because otherwise, the end result is what happened to the British in World War II in the beginning, where they came to us asking for the public to donate firearms, and we did, and they gladly took them.
Hang on. We held off for 4 years before you started doing your stuff.
Yeah, you did, but there was also the Sitzkrieg. But there was also the Sitzkrieg that you sat through. Remember the Sitzkrieg?
Blitzkrieg, you mean?
No, not Blitz. Sitzkrieg. Sitzkrieg. Remember?
I've never heard of a Sitzkrieg. I've heard of a Blitzkrieg.
Okay, there was also, if you look up in history, there was a Sitzkrieg. When Germany finally took in and they drove you out of Dunkirk, how long did it take before we reinvaded? There was a dead-it area where Germany, they set up the Vichy government in the bottom, and Germany wasn't progressing anywhere. They hadn't invaded Russia yet. Operation Barbarossa hadn't started up. Everything was dead and it was quiet.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. So I know it was 4 years, but all of those 4 years weren't toe-to-toe with the Germans every single day, 7 days a week. There was a war in the ocean with the U-boats, yes, but it was called the Sitzkrieg, the phony war, where nothing went on and everybody was waiting to see what was going to happen now.
Yeah, see, we
see what I mean? So trust me, I don't go toe-to-toe with me on this. I've got it. Bundles for Britain? Are you familiar with Bundles for Britain?
Yeah, I've had family that died in the first, second, and,
first, second,
I had family that went down on the Lusitania as well, which was carrying weapons from America to Britain. Did you know that the Irish, you know the Irish?
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you know that the Irish
were allied with the Germans?
Yes, you do know that.
Before you even said it, I said it.
Yeah.
You know that the Irish coal scuttle helmets, the World War I pattern helmets, are very rare and collectible. I don't even have one in my collection.
Oh, Matt, you're very clever. Well done.
I'm telling you, man, I'm on it. Right now, sitting in front of my house, I've got a two-pounder, a 1942 cute two-pounder, sitting hooked up to one of my Jeeps. You know what a two-pounder is?
I do, yes, yeah.
It's very rare. There's a guy that was just on the BBC with an interview. Somebody sent me the thing, and they interviewed him. He had it in his collection. He said, I think I'm the only private person to own one of these guns. And a friend of mine sent it to me and said, you know, Mike, maybe you should call him up and let him know that we have one over here. I've got one that I own. They're hard to find. So I'm on it, what I'm telling you. So when I tell you about the gun issue here in the U.S., as you can see, I know World War II. Trust me, I know the gun issue over here. I've been a gun collector for many, many years. And if you don't have a gun culture and the media has downplayed it, then people say, well, why do I need it? Well, crime happens anyway. Well, yeah, but I don't have the knives. These guys have the knives. Well, as these immigrants come in and they keep sweeping over England, and you have more of this where they hit that soldier, knocked him down, jumped out of the car, came out with machetes and hacked him to pieces.
They cut his head off of the kitchen knife.
Right. They hacked him apart. They cut this guy apart.
He was in the army, but he wasn't a soldier. He was a musician.
Now, but they didn't know they saw the uniform.
They saw his T-shirt, yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was in uniform going back to outside the base.
They saw his T-shirt, and it had, his barracks. He was in uniform. Yeah, you are right. He was in uniform.
Right.
But he wasn't a soldier. He was a musician. He was part of the band.
Oh. No, well, they said over here that he was a British soldier that was murdered. That's what they told us on the news.
He was in the army, yes, so they're not lying to you.
Oh, okay.
He was in the army, but he was a musician.
All right,
He wasn't a trained soldier. He was a musician. He was part of the band.
Have you heard some of the cases over in England where people have defended themselves, somebody breaking into a house, and the old man would take out a shotgun that wasn't registered or a pistol that he'd hidden? And he killed the murderer. Now, the guy might be in his 70s. He killed, not the murderer, he killed the person that was coming in to do harm to him. The guy might have had a knife or whatever. And the court sent these people to jail for 10 years or whatever. And I'm sure you've heard of some of these cases.
I know that if I'm, because I live in a rural area, I know that if I'm walking down the street and I come across a fence, I know not to cross it because there's a big sign on the gate saying, you know, trespassers will be shot. I know that. And I also know that if I do see that sign and into that man's land, I'm allowed to be, you know, buckshot in the ass. I know that, yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm
the gun laws.
I'm going to bring another caller in with us. I'm
yes.
sorry, George.
Cool.
I'm going to bring another caller in with us, and it is Black Caller, our Skype caller.
What's up, Antoinette?
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. What's up, Ron? What's up, Mike? What's up, everybody?
Hey, how you doing? Who's
Ron
this?
Ron is not here. Right? Yeah, I was
here. Oh, this is Naj. What's up, Iggy? Mom?
Hi, Naj. How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, I'm glad that you came to join the conversation with us. And Ron, unfortunately, is missing in action.
Ah, okay.
But please chime in on the conversation with us.
Okay, no problem. Well, I'll just hang back and let them continue because I think they were talking about something in
yes.
English, as far as what's going
yeah.
on.
Well,
you're more than welcome. What we're talking about is trespassing on someone's land and getting a load of buckshot in the ass. Is that right or is that wrong?
Oh, that's right. But if you break into someone's house in England and they have a gun, the court system in England ends up charging the person who owns the apartment for defending himself.
Well, they're not charging them for defending themselves. They're charging them for owning a gun, which is illegal now.
Have a gun in England. You can have a gun if you're licensed and you have to go through quite a bit. I mean, it's involved. You can.
Right.
But if it's an illegal gun and you use it to defend yourself, they're going to put you away, even though you were right. This guy could have been armed, had a knife, and was coming after you. Probably, even if he murdered somebody else in the house and you shot that person, you're going to go to jail for 10 years.
Yeah, but Mike, if there's a law, you can't make exceptions to the law based on okay, he was in his right mind because this was somebody entering his home to defend himself.
But
of course, you should
right.
defend yourself. But if you have an illegal gun, they still have to. You know what I mean?
But see, that's why we're saying some of these laws are wrong. A lot of these laws are wrong, and people are putting up with it and they don't fight it. Well, now I've read another article out of the Daily News, I think, out of the UK. Where they said people are starting to fight for their rights back. They don't want.
Well, eventually they will get their guns back. But the question, the really big question here is, how did they give up their guns without some kind of increase in police presence and police power as far as them being able to either be really close to the so-called crime areas and really making a difference in somebody, you know what I mean, committing a crime or not. So. If they gave up the guns without that concession from, the politicians, I really would have to blame the English populace on this.
Yeah.
One.
I mean, just like over here in the U.S., we know that the police are not responsible and cannot, will not guarantee our safety. That's come up in the courts many times.
In our country, over in England, right, we had an open day where you were given, 7 days, I think it was. No, it was open week, and it was a very big event. It was all over the news, all over the telly, where anyone in the country that had weapons, any blade over 6 inches, any firearm over the caliber.
Somebody is making some.
Yeah,
background.
We're losing him. It sounds like he's distorting or fading in and out.
I think his Skype is. Your Skype needs to be adjusted, Derek.
Yeah,
Derek, we're losing you.
All right, is that any better?
Yeah.
Yes, that is better.
Well, I didn't do nothing, so. Must have been
whatever it was, it straightened itself up. Before it was going in and out. So, and
yeah,
Skype
lift up your
that.
Left foot.
Oh, yeah, it's probably because I've got a mute button on my lap. I just stood up and went and got another beer. That's probably what it was. Right, but we had a day. We had a day in our country, which was between 7 days. You had 7 days to hand in any blade which was over 6 inches, which is what the size of your pinky. I don't know. Size from your wrist to your pinky. You know, it's not. It's not. So it's from your wrist to your pinky, and from the top to the bottom, and any weapon which was over the caliber of a 2.2. In this country, you're allowed to own any weapon, any projectile, which is under the 2.2 caliber, which is anything which can kill a rabbit, a pigeon. You know, if you shot a human with it, it would just bounce off with a bruise.
Well, no, I guess unless you do it at close range.
Well, we had a huge response. Everyone handed in all their weapons. Not everyone. Most people handed in all their weapons. And they all got smelted down, got recycled, chucked into the van, you know, and everyone's good. See, I don't walk down the street and think who's got a gun, who's got, I can walk down the street safely, not worrying about who's going to shoot me, who's going to creep up on me with a knife, you know, it's all
okay,
safe.
Okay, well now, what about, all right, no guns, you said no knives or anything else. Now, what about just with someone's hands?
What, you want about, like,
like somebody just comes up behind you and starts choking you or something.
Physically grabs you.
I mean, really, do y'all feel safe knowing that your police can bust in your house at any time? You know, your government can, you know, decide that they're, you know, because the UN Agenda 21 is, you know, global. So that you'll be thrown off of your land, you know, thrown off of your property, and you can't defend it, you know, or anything else, because they're the ones with the weapons, not y'all.
Well, I'm not a landowner myself. I'm not a landowner, but walking down the street,
mm-hmm.
I feel very safe. Walking anywhere at all. In my country, I can go anywhere. I can walk in the woods at night. I can walk anywhere. I've got a 15-year-old daughter, you know. I can walk with her through the woods. We're all good. No, you know, and I'm not scared of any animal, because there is no more predatory beasts on this, you know, on this island I live on. And I can be perfectly happy.
Okay, well...
Is that silly of me?
Pardon me? Well, I'm glad that you can live with that and you're comfortable with it. Here in the States, I don't think that it's going to be that easy.
Well, that's
you know,
never
because people can make
America.
A weapon out of anything.
Yeah. And that's
and
never
it could be illegal. I mean, somebody can take some wood and, you know, chisel it down and make a point.
Yeah,
and
anyone can do that, though. Anyone can make a weapon out of anything. It only takes, like, you know, a 5-year-old child can make a stabbing weapon out of a toothbrush, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, break a bottle and there's a weapon there. I mean, so... I mean, I'm glad you feel safe. You know, and is everyone in that you know in England and from your papers and, you know, just in general, do you know of anyone that is dissatisfied? You know, is there any groups that are fighting this, that they're trying to get their weapons back? They're, you know, trying to find ways to protect their families? I mean, because if a group comes at you, you know, one person... You know, just you and your daughter and your wife, and it's a whole group of people because they're hungry, and, you know, how safe do you feel then?
Well, yeah, I mean, you saying that, if, I do have more defenses, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here completely open waiting for someone to come and get me. At my front door, above my door, I've got a metal club, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but that's above my door. It's hidden away. That's something my daughter doesn't even know about that. That's just my own personal, what do people call it? What do they call it? You know, when you're paranoia, that's my own paranoia, you know, if something's going to happen. I've got a club above my door, you know, and it's a metal rod with a big... club on the end of it, you know, but that's got nothing to do with, you know, that's tucked away above my door frame, you know, so.
Yeah, well, Iggy's mom had put a, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't Iggy, I'm sorry, Iggy put a comment in the chat room, and she asked, would you feel safe walking through Islam community, you know, Muslim community, basically.
Well,
you know, you and your daughter.
For an Islam community. Well,
walking through a Muslim community.
Yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah, I was. Quite happily went through. Yeah, because we all live together. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I posted a couple
Mike
of things in the chat room here.
Yeah, Micah put in a link that the British citizens want their guns back, according
to... Look at the date.
May 31st. Wait a minute. Here's the 29th. May 29th. Okay. I was
2013.
Last year.
We're talking about a whole tier of problems.
And
that's 85%.
Yeah, 85%.
Right.
I mean, this is a poll that was done. It was a British newspaper. But, I mean, if you do a search for it, it's Mail Online, Daily Mail, polls, Attention Parliament, Brits want their guns back, are the British jihadists going to turn guns on us? There's a lot that's on this. It's a big debate. But, like I said, if somebody is not part of the gun culture, it's something alien to them. And, I mean, Derek, have you ever owned a gun?
Yes, I have, yeah.
What type? 22, or were you a shooter? Were you a hunter? Did you ever do competition?
No, it was a 2.2. I've never been in competitions. No,
right.
But
it was a 22.
I've shot it a few times.
It was a 22, regular target, right?
Yeah, not big enough caliber to kill a person, but big enough to kill a rabbit, human.
Well, yeah, right? But I mean, a 22 can still kill somebody. But if you're a collector, a gun. I mean, like myself, I'm a collector for many years. And when I have people that don't understand guns all of a sudden coming to me, trying to explain to me that why I should not have what I own, what I legally own, that I have thousands of dollars invested in, that I've already been checked out by the government, I have a permit to carry a concealed firearm, and they check me out better than they check. You know, like I said, a friend of mine's a state trooper in Louisiana. I said this on one of the other shows, and he said when he stops somebody in a car and they don't have a gun, then he gets nervous as a police officer because that means that person that he stopped is a felon, has an arrest record. Now,
man, that is a leap beyond measure.
Yeah, he said, when I stop somebody and if they don't have a gun, chances are this guy's a felon. There's a reason he's not carrying.
Well, if he doesn't have a gun, he's...
I'm telling you, every part of the country is different.
That's more
indication of how bad our police are.
Every part of the country is different,
though. At a pullover.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That is.
Yeah, every part of the country
is
different. I mean,
I'm not talking about every part of the country. I'm talking about that police officer friend of yours. If he's making that kind of logical leap, there's something wrong with him.
No. Where his part of the country where everybody might be into gun rights. Everybody might be carrying. It's a normal thing. That's no big deal in his region.
If you said that was Westchester, New York, now that's out of the ordinary.
Yeah, there's something wrong.
Mike, let me tell you something. If that police officer friend of yours says that in court about a case of him pulling somebody over, he's going to be in trouble, and his precinct is going to be in trouble.
Well, I'll tell you, that is not. But you got to admit, when it comes down to it, reality, common sense, you know that if a felon is not supposed to have a firearm, right?
A felon's not supposed to have a firearm, but that doesn't mean if you don't have a gun, therefore.
No, but in that area, in his town, in that area that he lives in, it's common for everybody to have a gun.
Still.
So that's what I'm
saying.
Every region, we keep forgetting and we judge everything by how we live in our lives, in our area, and look at it through a straw. The country's a big country.
Yeah, the country's a big country, but we're still based on certain laws. And once you start saying, well, the law says this, but I decide this because in my personal experience, this is what I think.
But every state, every county has different laws. There are some fishing laws in some towns that differ with other counties and sure as hell different with other states. There are different laws for different because the population's different. There are different
He could pull over a pacifist Baptist preacher down there who doesn't have a gun on him because he's a pacifist. And should he assume that man's a felon? No, that's
Whoa, what is that?
I think that's Gunslinger's phone. Sometimes Gunslinger's phone, it's a cordless. If the battery starts going, I think sometimes it makes that noise.
It'll do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of times, Derek, getting back to it, I mean, honest to God, about the thing about the guns, the 22, somebody that doesn't understand guns should have no right. That'd be like if someone's not qualified, a politician's not qualified to really come in and voice an opinion or pass a law on a subject that he doesn't know anything about, I mean, it's going to have serious repercussions. They call it unintended consequences.
I don't know what it's like over there. I don't know what it's like over your country. You know, you've obviously had a fuck. Excuse me for my friend. I was just about to swear. Because you've had a, you know, that turbulent past. In our country, you're not allowed any weapon above a 2.2. Anything above a 2.2, you need a license for. Now, to qualify for a license of anything above, no, you are allowed. You said that. Yeah, you need a license. Anything above a caliber of a 2.2, you have to have a license.
Right.
Now.
Right. I think you guys have a bigger problem than guns, though. I think the surveillance state that they allow in London is a huge problem, because how do you ever get that genie back in the bottle to where you say, look, we are private citizens, we pay taxes, we don't want you invading our privacy at every step that we take in London. The fact that you guys allow that, I think that's a little more scary.
If I could chime in for a moment.
Yes.
Derek, is it?
Yeah, Derek, yeah.
Okay, Derek, I shudder to think that the United States has become so surveillanced, much in the same way the UK has.
I was just about to say that. Everyone I spoke to keeps mentioning the CCTV over here, and everyone's always watched. And I always hit them back by saying that the USA is the most watched country in the entire planet.
Right, but they couldn't do it on its face. They had to go through back channels, NSA hustles, and other, you know, fake little things to do it. They had to do it illegally, essentially. They could not put that up to a vote and have Americans say, yes, we want a surveillance state. That would never happen.
We're only a little country. We're only small, you know.
If I could finish what I was comment.
Excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
You're saying, go on, Bob.
Being as the United States has become the most surveillanced country, I believe second to what the United Kingdom has been over the years, it kind of makes me wonder, you know, where have we as a populace, both here in the U.S. and in the U.K., where have we failed to tell our leaders, hey, you know what? We now know we're here in the U.S. Whoa, what's that?
I've no idea.
It's probably Ron Reck calling you.
Well, or either that or the NSA. Take your pick.
Ask him where he is.
I'm sorry, y'all. My call dropped.
Uh-oh, okay.
Oops.
And so I got back in. But let me say this. Folks, we have 15 minutes left. If y'all would like to go into overtime, then we can do so, and I will put the call-in number in the chat room for you. It's 718-508-9813, and when the chat room goes out, here is a link for you to go into the chat.
Oh, such a shame. Antoinette, do you have big plans for
yes.
the show?
Do I? Why do you say that?
No, did you? Did you have big plans for the show? Did you have your own mind that you thought, I'm going to do this tonight? And then you've met me, and...
Oh, I'm glad you called.
No, we're all glad you called.
No, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about, you know, like, maybe Antoinette, I don't know, Ron took the night off, and... Antoinette's like, yeah, you know, my show tonight. And then she's ended up with three lunatics talking about guns and explosions and killing people. And, you know.
Oh, really? No.
No? You're all good, are you?
No,
yeah,
I think
I'm
it's
good.
A great conversation about freedom and security.
Yes, I do too.
Yeah, and we should let, I don't know where George was going with that. I kind of want to hear where he was
going.
I'd like to hear George as well.
George.
I lost my train of thought. I got
I'm
I've
sorry,
got it I've
dear.
Got it over here.
Okay.
It's somewhere here. I just.
Well, George, if I can remind you, you were talking about what have we done or where are we kind of deficient in that we've let, you know, it get to this state. I think I summarized it.
And you are?
Naj.
All right. Thanks, Naj. Look, it's real simple. Here in the United States, we didn't know some of us had our suspicions, but we weren't sure that we were being watched by our own government. The National Security Agency, or NSA, monitoring Skype calls, cell phone calls, house phone calls, emails, text messages. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you don't want to believe is happening, but when it came out in the wash, ultimately, it was the kind of thing that, you know, you're sitting there saying to yourself, okay, so how did we get so far that since we now know this is happening, why are we, the American people here in the United States, allowing it to happen? And if the same thing is happening in the UK, why are the people of the United Kingdom allowing it to continue? Why aren't they speaking up and saying enough is enough? You know, we're starting to do it here, but you know, if you live in a society, be it the United Kingdom or here, and you're being and you've got unfettered surveillance being done to you. Hello, NSA, I know you're listening, and you can kiss my Royal American Red Rosy Cherokee Indian Tukas. The bottom line is, we should speak up. We need to let the government know. This is unacceptable. We are not enemies. But here in the States, many of the politicians refer to us as domestic terrorists.
Yes.
So that gives the NSA just cause to say, well, if you're a domestic terrorist, we have to watch everything you do, monitor everything you say, everything you write, read, whatever.
No,
I've never heard that before.
I agree.
I've never heard that before. Domestic terrorists.
Yeah, they throw that at a lot of groups now.
That makes everyone a weekend warrior. Everyone on Blog Talk Radio is off a weekend warrior. Yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah, anything you say makes you a potential terrorist. So
yep.
So you got that odd logic. And then you got just the politics of fear. We both have countries who've had terrorist events, and through those terrorist events, we've seen legislation that has restricted freedom and taken away civil liberties. Now, if we're willing to fall for that every time something happens and not understanding that just the world is dangerous and things happen, then they're going to continue to push and push and push as much as they can. So I do think this is on us, and I think it's based off of our own fears. We allow them to scare us whenever an event happens.
Can I say that you may have missed out a couple of countries there, because I believe that the whole entirety of Europe is being watched. Let's also throw Australia into that as well, as it is another sovereign nation. You know, let's throw it all in together. So let's talk about worldwide. The human race is being watched, but for what purpose are we being watched? Are we being studied? Are we studying ourselves? What is the point of the entire world? I mean, most of the cameras in space, you know, all our satellites in space, most of them are pointed towards the Earth. You know, 80% of them are pointed towards the Earth. You know, so what's going on there?
Well, I would say go ahead, Angela.
I was just going to say that Iggy's mom said it's called a knee-jerk reaction.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Since 9/11 happened, this country has had way too many knee-jerk reactions to too many things, especially when it comes to, and not limited to, monitoring what terrorists are doing. Okay?
Yeah.
Because
they've taken
it one step further. Now they're not only monitoring the terrorists, they're monitoring us.
Yeah, so are they really monitoring the terrorists?
Keep saying they, don't you mean we? We are monitoring ourselves. And there's that one person who decides you know, out, and he was born the same as what we are. He was born by his mother. He's grown up with his own principles, and now this one person is now in charge of this giant network. Is it one person or is it a collective? You know, we don't know, do we? You know,
it's always a collective. But the thing is, good governance is if something happens, you have a cooling off period, you wait, you think rationally, and then you respond. Our setup is we have a dramatic event. Okay, we have to respond right now. Let's see how far we can push them. How far can we push them? This just happened. You're scared. This is the law we want to put on to ensure your safety, which they can actually never do. They can't ensure your safety, but they can give you the facade of ensuring your safety. And if people are willing to sign up for that, they're going to lose their rights. And as who was it, Ben Franklin? Those who choose security over freedom. I think it's Ben Franklin.
Benjamin,
I'm not sure.
Benjamin Franklin said it best.
Those who choose security over freedom usually end up with neither. And
yeah,
that's pretty much where we are
exact,
right now.
The exact quote there, Nash, is those who sacrifice freedom for security deserve neither.
There we go.
Okay, that's my favorite quote. I have that almost committed to memory ad infinitum. I have it even saved in my computer under a text file. But the thing is, but Dr. Franklin was right. He was absolutely right when he said, "Those who sacrifice freedom for security deserve neither." He was so right, because we can ill afford to allow our freedom to be trampled upon, to be stripped from us. Look at what's happening right now with the Constitution. There's a joint resolution in the Senate and the Congress, and the Senate side of the joint resolution has a section in it that talks about Congress shall not be able to abridge the freedom of the press, leaving out freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. In effect, it's stripping us, if this passes, it would strip us of our First Amendment rights.
Now, let's talk about this. Now, do you think that when, the Native American country became open to anyone can grab land, do you think that the land of the free was really free? Or do you think that the land of the free has always been on a leash? When all these Irish and Italians and Greeks and all these people fled to the Americas, do you really honestly believe that they? Do you believe that they believe that they were actually moving into a new world where they can make what they want to be free, or do you believe that there was a overall plan to start with?
I wouldn't call it that diabolical, but the idea that somebody whose life is not going too well in Europe would decide to go somewhere else and, you know, start out anew, I don't think any population anywhere, if you're pretty much on the outs, that you wouldn't try somewhere else if you were given the opportunity. I guess the second side of that whole thing is, look, you're coming over here, and they're promising you all these different things. But of course, once you get here, you know, the situation changes. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, you can live here, but here's the rule book, and then they smack down a 1,000-page book in front of you. You know.
Look, history has taught me that when you sacrifice everything and get and ultimately have nothing left, you wonder if the one thing you have left, which is yourself, your life, is worth living because the government has taken everything from you. In this country, if the government succeeds in stripping the First Amendment, they will that will be the catalyst for success in other parts of the Constitution to be stripped from us.
Can you tell me what the new amendment was? What you just mentioned. What was this new amendment? Can you tell me?
It wasn't a new one. It was they want to change the First Amendment. They want to go in and they want to toy with it, and they want to strip us of the rights, essentially, because they're going to be rewording it.
Okay, so can you tell me word for word what the new amendment? You must have put your hand up when you was like 6 years old and pledged allegiance to your country. Tell me what it was.
Someone has one.
George is the best on that.
Grandfather's clock. Grandfather clock.
That's mine.
Oh, okay. It sounds pretty. I like it. Iggy's mom said they can't only buy an Article 5 convention.
Right.
Right.
Which I don't see them
only
getting.
By an Article 5 convention. But here's. I wrote an op-ed about
this. Wait a minute, George. Before you do that, could I just say this really quick? I'm really sorry for talking over you. 3 minutes left, folks. Please call in. The number is 718-508-9813. Again, that number is 718-508-9813. And press 1 if you wish to talk, or you can just listen to the conversation. And I will put the link in again for the chat room so that when this one goes down, you'll be able to get in and still have a chat room. I'm sorry, George.
That's okay. I posted the link to my op-ed in the chat room, and basically, the op-ed also what I've done is I've included both the Senate and congressional joint resolutions. Now, what this joint resolution is they're proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States relating to contributions and expenditures intended to affect elections. But in the third section of the Senate version, it says, nothing in this article shall be construed to grant Congress the power to abridge the freedom of the press, leaving out the other parts of the First Amendment, which are freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the right of the people to petition the government for redress of grievances. If this joint resolution passes, they will, through this amendment to the Constitution, in effect, nullify the First Amendment in respects to those three items that I just mentioned. And I agree with Iggy Mom when she says, you know, that it what did she say here? That they can only do it by an Article 5 convention?
Yes.
The only bad feature is, look at the kind of government we're saddled with in this country, okay? They don't care about Article 5 conventions. If what they pass this, it's accepted.
No. You're raising a good point, George. Because the other side of this is, if they can't legally do it or can't get it to where, okay, like she said, they had the Article 5 convention. If they can't do that, if they just change the practice without acknowledging it, and it's only affecting a few people, and there's no huge groundswell from other Americans, then it happens, and then it's business as usual.
Yep.
I've only become somewhat of an activist in the last 10 years, and one thing I found out was, the days of civil rights movement and all these other people and what they did, the rules are different. So now when you want to go protest something, my brother was killed a few years ago and we were protesting the investigation.
Oh, no.
It's okay. It's okay. It'll be fine. But what we learned was that you have to get a permit to protest now. Oof. So if you go down and try to protest in a huge group, they can come out and arrest you, take you to jail, and harass you in a certain kind of way to kind of break up the protest. And you don't have any legal standing to kind of back you because they can say you didn't have your permit. And then, like Iggy and you are saying, well, if we refer to the Constitution, we can protest for a redress of government. And pretty much, look, man, if you don't have a high-priced lawyer, it doesn't matter. If you don't have that permit, you cannot protest anything. Now, how does that work with the Constitution?
It doesn't. In all honesty, it doesn't. But you raise a good point, Nash. Down in Washington D.C. right now, there's a grassroots movement that's been ongoing since May 16th, Operation American Spring. Now, the founder of that movement, Colonel Harry Riley, a retired U.S. Army colonel, working with a constitutional attorney, had articles of impeachment drawn up for President Obama. They are this grassroots movement is calling for the resignations of people like Eric Holder, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, John Boehner, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. Now, if this joint resolution passes, they wouldn't be able to do anything down there on the National Mall like they're doing right now. I've interviewed Harry Riley three times now, May 22nd, May 26th, and June 19th. And in each of the three interviews, it's the situation is still the same. It is a there's no violence going on. In fact, they have the cooperation of the DC Metro Police. They have the cooperation and assistance of the park rangers. When they go to cross the street, the DC Metro Police stops traffic for them. They will stop traffic so they can cross the road.
Yes,
they're literally showing every courtesy to OAS. But if this joint resolution passes, what's going to happen is, in the grand scheme of things, grassroots movements like OAS will not be able to do anything anymore. You and I won't even be able to have conversations like this on the internet, because once they put that into place, our ability to be citizen journalists and have conversations and discussions like this on shows like mm-hmm. mine, will be gone. We won't be able to do it, because the government will say, you don't have the right to do that. You can't do that anymore.
That is true.
And they don't care about the Article 5 Convention, which, by the way, constitutional anything to that regards the Constitution is supposed to be mm-hmm. a constitutional convention.
Yeah, that's what she has.
That's right. What an Article 5 convention is. It's actually a constitutional convention, which means all 50 states, at least two-thirds of them, have to be involved.
But right. George is right. Every administration, every congressman, every senator has certain legal people around them, and their job is to figure out how do we get around certain laws, how do we get around certain things.
Y'all lost, man. Y'all American people are fucking lost, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Michael Hood.
Michael Hood?
Yeah.
Hey, Mike.
Michael, I know you got a lot of background noise.
Yeah, you got a lot of noise.
I would like to say that I am going now. I'm off. I'm going to bed. It's now, I'm not going to bed. I've got things to do. It's 7 a.m.
Well, Derek, before you leave, one thing about talking about freedom of speech. You remember the politician that was arrested? I'm putting a link right now in. For quoting Churchill, right?
I'm not in the chat room anymore.
He's not in the chat room anymore.
Well, there was an article in one of your papers back there. It was a politician. He was the British politician arrested for quoting Churchill from a book that was written by Winston Churchill. This guy quoted Paul Weston, chairman of the Liberty GB Party, was facing 2 years in prison. Did you hear about that?
I don't know. I don't really watch TV, to be honest.
Oh, okay. But
I like to say,
wise man.
What was the statement?
I'm making all that noise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I hear a lot of background noise coming, Mike.
That wasn't me. That wasn't me. I have myself on mute. I always mute myself. I'm a professional. I'm not a guy to just sit there and.
There's a big problem that's going on in England. They're having a big problem with Islam. They're having a huge problem with Islam, and the government's been letting things get out of control, and it's been causing a lot of problems, upsetting a lot of people. And so now this man came up and quoted a book out of a book that was written by Churchill, and the police arrested him, But they ended up releasing him because there was nothing wrong with what he was doing. He had a megaphone, and he was in front of Winchester Guild Hall in Hampshire. And
That's about 5 miles from where we live.
No, man, y'all talking the wrong shit now, man. You're really talking
about
shit.
Michael, wait a minute, baby. We're talking, Derek lives over in England, so.
He lives in England.
Yeah, I mean, you can live in England, you can live in Australia, you can live in China, you can live in North Korea, but.
Oh, no, we're talking about freedom of speech. In other words, like the Magna Carta doesn't outright guarantee them freedom of speech the way our First Amendment does.
There are other
provisions that are written in the Magna Carta. There are different laws we're getting into, like.
The Magna Carta was for the people. You know, that's still the
same. You got rap artists that talks about the Magna Carta now.
But they don't even know.
I don't know how the Magna Carta applies to the colonies, but over here, it's a very strong.
I just don't understand how Americans.
The Magna Carta here is all about the human rights law, rather than. Anyway. I would like to say good night to everybody. It's very nice to meet you all.
Very nice talking to you. And please come back again. I truly, truly
enjoy.
Yeah,
we enjoyed having you. Really
nice.
Yeah,
definitely. Do drop back anytime, man.
I've got things to do. But it's very nice to meet you all. And everyone over there.
Okay, well.
Wink, wink. I run the colonies. You know, wink, wink.
All right. Take down a camera for me tonight, Derek. Take down a surveillance camera.
Yeah, and Derek, the gentleman that you were speaking to, he is the host of Firefox News Online, which comes on 3 hours before this show.
Yeah. George is the man. George, you the man.
Yes,
George.
Firefox News Online Primetime.
Oh,
so that way
you
can catch him.
Very nice to speak to you all, and I'll see you okay.
We'll see you later.
All right, Derek.
Okay,
have a good
night,
sir.
Thank you again. Well, good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, have a good morning.
I'm going to question y'all now. I'm a hot fire tonight, man. When I get hot fires, I question people about what's going on in this country, man. Because, I mean, you can talk all you want about the country is good, and you can talk about what's wrong with it, but how can we really change some things? Because in my state right now, we have a militia too. We have a militia that's really trying to cut this order out that's happening. Because our government has been taken over since 2009. It ain't like it happened 2 years ago. No, it was taken over in 2009. Because if you look at Henry Kissinger and you look at George Soros and you look at all these guys, they said that this is what's going to happen in America. And you're looking at now in America, there was another guy that predicted that by 2020 that ISIS going on right now, they predicted by 2020 that ISIS will already have their own main, that they will take over these countries. And if you heard the guy that told Obama like a week ago, he told Obama that I'll meet you in New York. That's why we're having the damn border system that's being locked, that's being open free. Because if you look at the book that called for the uranium, it's a uranium book. The book was back in the 80s that said that they will bring their troops, they'll bring their sleeper cells across the border and come into America. And it'll start with sleeper cells.
I think you're mixing some things here. As far as ISIS, that's part of that whole situation of fear that we're talking about.
If you're watching the news every day,
I'm
not talking about ISIS now.
I'm not talking about you yourself. Just let me hold off 1 second. If Americans are watching, excuse me.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
If Americans are watching the news every day and they're seeing these things about ISIS, that makes them more likely to be a little more scared and to be a little more fearful and to be willing to agree to some bad legislation, which is what we've shown in the last few years. And as far as the borders, that's a totally different situation. Can a Russian spy get into the borders down there south of Texas? No. But can a migrant worker from Mexico get in through the borders? Yes. Why is that? Because they want cheap labor coming up here. So it's a thing of what they want as opposed to this, them just being
negligent. You're right.
As far as the
and at the same time, you're wrong. But there's a book that deal with the Iranian government that had a book. I forgot the name of the book. I don't have my computer with me because my computer's in the shop. But there
let me save you. Let me save you this, man. The Iranian government is not powerful enough to determine world policy.
They're powerful. They're powerful more than what you think it is, because they have sleeper cells that been coming around from coming across the border of Mexico since the 1980s. So they've been here. There's sleeper cells here in America, and guess who let these sleeper cells come to America? Your own government. Your own government let these sleeper cells come here. Why would your own government let these sleeper cells come to this country for, man?
I'll give you two examples. Some of the Iranians who've come over here are our guys, meaning they went against their government over there for certain benefits and came over here, so they're not necessarily sleeper cells.
Right.
And then as far as, like, you having to worry about Iran, let me just give you an idea about what Iran is. They only can pump the oil allotted by Saudi Arabia, because
OPEC.
Saudi Arabia is the main controller of OPEC. So Iran's oil output is determined by another country.
Yep.
That should give you an idea about how powerful they are. Not very.
No, they're not. He's right. Naj is right. Those guys, they're minor players. They're nobodies. They've got money, and they're promoting behind the curtain. They're doing all sorts of stuff behind the curtain, what they can get away with, but they're minor players.
Yeah.
Look, let me say, okay, first of all, Antoinette asked me to cover for her while she takes care of something. So let me pose a really good question here to everyone on the dais. At the end of the day, can we as American citizens, as freedom-loving Americans, can we do anything that would change the way our government is acting? Can we invoke any kind of change that aside from voting, that would tell the government, hey, look, you know what? I got bad news for you, boys and girls there in Congress, Senate, and especially you in the White House. All of you need to start listening to us. We are your employers.
We cannot do it, George. Because you know why, George? Because people cannot come together and come as one to know that the corruption of this government is doing. Because everybody has their own little theory about what's going on, and this is what you believe in and stuff. But we can't, George. We cannot come together, man. But the only way that we could come together until something happens that's major than 9/11.
Michael Hood, why do we have to wait until something happens?
It depends on how far-reaching the issue is. If there's an issue that all Americans can kind of get behind and rally behind, then, yeah, we can't get change in that particular issue.
Just hold on.
9/11 was from the top down. We're talking about from the bottom up. We're talking about citizens, not politicians dictating.
What can the citizens do?
If you let me finish, I'll tell you, man.
Okay.
If there's a single issue or a few issues that all Americans can agree on, then, yeah, we can get a huge groundswell going enough to change that particular thing. The question is, once we rally to that, can they throw out a divisive issue to kind of split that whole coalition? So if they start talking about gay marriage again and then we split up again, then, you know, that coalition is gone and we only got one thing solved. But, yeah, we can solve things by that.
Why hasn't that been solved now, Nas? Why hasn't anything changed now? You're talking about it should start from the bottom to the top. But why is the bottom not even doing that? Because I've been hearing this for the past 9 years.
Okay, it's 2014.
Mike, let me tell you something.
It's 2014, Mike. When you were a kid, did you ever think gay people would be able to be married in America?
I mean, gay people is the least of my agenda.
You're using that as an example. We're not using that as some kind of great thing. I'm using that as an example. The gay group in America decided to rally together to make sure they got certain things passed, and they actually did it. That's what I'm trying to get you to see. I'm not trying to say get behind their movement or anything like that. I'm just trying to say, do you see how that works?
What are people got to do with the corruption of the government when they're taking away our Second Amendment rights and our First Amendment rights, and they've been doing this since 2001, since 9/11 happened? So, I mean, it's like,
well,
it's
easy,
like their agenda is irrelevant to what they're doing now. And you know what they do, government's doing? The government is making you focus on the gay agenda, and don't worry about when we take around your Second Amendment rights. Because if you look at Obama,
I think you're
the
missing
other
my
day,
point,
no, I hear what you're saying. I hear you saying that gay agenda is that's a major cause. It's like we have to worry about gay people.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that a coalition that is united can get things done. That's what I'm saying. So if you're talking about the Second Amendment. If there was a big enough groundswell as far as for the Second Amendment, then no politician would be willing to put their career on the line by opposing it. You see how this works? If you get enough
should I worry about gay people and when I, should I? No, let me, okay.
You're still stuck on the gay
it.
Issue. I told you that
should,
was
no, should
example.
I worry about gay people?
Mike, that was an
I
example. That was an example.
You should worry about the things that concern you, but you got to understand you have to build a coalition behind the things that concern you. That group he talked about in Washington, D.C., right now that group is probably, you could say, center-right. They haven't pulled in any of the left. They haven't pulled in the old country club Republicans either. So because they haven't been able to pull either side in, that group is kind of left out hanging to dry, and you see mass media is not covering
them. So why hasn't anything changed, though? I mean, I hear a lot of people talking, though.
Forget it.
I don't see nothing changing.
Because, Michael, we're not unified. What he's saying is we're not unified enough. Every time we do start to get unified and create a point, what happens is we get dissolved. We end up getting it gets diluted. All of us, two people, a part of the group end up over here. Some of the people end up on gay rights. Some of the people over here about the Common Core. Instead of staying focused on one thing, we got to stay focused.
Because it seems like everybody's so caught up in different damn schemes. It's like everybody got this
calm
order.
Calm down, Michael. Calm down,
order.
Sweetheart.
I'm
calm
just saying, it's like, why am I wasting my time trying
to
wake
people
up when everybody got so different damn opinions and so much political aspects of what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you why you should waste your time, because Mike Hood, someday you're going to be an older Mike Hood, and you want to sit back and you want to look in the mirror and say, I handled myself as a man, I fought for what I believed in, and even if it didn't work, I went down swinging.
Wow, Blog Talk Radio? I'm a swing on Blog Talk Radio?
Well, Blog Talk Radio should not be the...
If I can
tell you what, Blog Talk Radio serves a purpose because...
if you think Blog Talk Radio is activism, we got a whole other conversation.
No,
yeah, I'm telling you.
If I can interject here for a moment. Look, let me put it quite simply. In order to affect change in any situation, okay? Now, I'm a military man, okay? I served for 6 years in the state military.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use this as a prime example. To affect change within the unit, in order to make positive changes, the unit has to come together as one. That means that every single soldier, from the lowest ranks up into the NCO ranks, have to be able to work together as a team. Okay? If we start doing our own separate things, we're not working as a team anymore. You follow what I'm saying so far? Now, the same idea applies as civilians. All right, I'm going to use the Second Amendment as an example. Mike and I live in New York. We have a situation here in New York where the governor signed into law in the dead of night, without public input of any kind, what's called the New York Safe Act. Now, the New York Safe Act basically has more restrictions on gun owners than Carter's got liver pills in a bottle. Now, we're trying to see that law repealed. In order to do that, we have to come together as a people. All of us who are pro-Second Amendment, those of us who are gun owners, and even those of us who are not gun owners. I'm not a gun owner, but I stand behind the Constitution, I stand behind the Second Amendment, and I stand behind my friends and those who I don't even know who are gun owners who believe that what the governor and the state legislature did was wrong. So, how do we affect change we come together as a collective, as a unit, as a team, as one, in order to make things happen. I'll give you another example. Several years ago, I was involved with a group called the Coalition for Creative Solutions. Back in my hometown, at the time, the city of Peekskill, New York, wanted to put up surveillance cameras throughout the city of Peekskill. These high-end surveillance cameras were remote access, had a 45-degree angle pitch, and had a zoom on them so tight that you could see the hairs on the back of a fly. Literally. Well, the city of Peekskill was going to do that. They weren't going to listen to public input or anything like that. So the Coalition for Creative Solutions came into being. It was a group of Peekskill residents who got together, who sat down and worked together to try and bring about change, to change the minds of the politicians so that they don't do something that ultimately could hurt the people of Peekskill rather than help them. Now, we managed to do that. We stopped them because we not only were organized as a small group, but we had the backing of other groups who came in because they saw the same situation happen in their communities. So people from even outside of Peekskill were starting to come together with us to tell the government, no, this cannot happen. We do not want this. And ultimately, it never came into being. So right. So Michael Hood, what I say to you is, let's say you have there's something that's happening in this country that the government is trying to do against the American people. And you have a whole neighborhood of people that are of the same mindset as you. You don't like it, you don't want to see it happen, and you want to see it stopped. The only way to do that is to come together as a community, to come together as a neighborhood, come together as one. So, does it work every single time? Maybe not. But you won't know until you try. And that's the whole point, even with grassroots movements like Operation American Spring. There are thousands of people that have gotten involved in Operation American Spring. Why?
George, you got a good point, George.
That they can help promote change.
You're right, George. But you got to look at it, man. When shit hits the fan in America, there ain't going to be nobody together at all, man. You might have certain groups and militias that come together because when shit hits the fan in America, it's gonna be all chaos now, right? I live in a small town right now, and I only have like 3 people out of 100,000 people. And I know how to hunt, I know how to go in the woods, I know how to go fend for myself, and it's like it's gonna be all chaos, man. It's like we talk about this now, man. It's like when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah, but Hood,
no one's going to know how to do anything, man.
Right. I fully get what you're saying, but here's
George
the problem.
Will be ready. George will be ready. Mike will be ready. Ron, we'll all be ready, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, but, you know, Michael, you can't make people
it's not
do
making
what you want to do.
It's telling you
yeah,
what
but
you...
See,
it's not making people, Antoinette. It's
I
not
know,
making people...
I know, but, honey, you know what? You can't, if people don't want to listen, if people want to, you know, still go on day by day as if nothing has changed in their eyes that they can still look through it through rose-colored glasses.
Antoinette, only the militia knows. The militia know what's going on. Like, if I saw Mike, and I saw George, and we was in the woods, I would give them a damn flag or something to let them know that I'm with them. There's certain things that militia's gonna do when the things hit the fan. Because you got to know that if that's your enemy or that's not your enemy.
but you know something?
Well, Michael, but you're talking about the whole, you know, when it hits, about what everyone is going to do. But, honey, keep in mind, you can't control everyone.
But no, you control. No, I mean, but the militias will know. They will know who is real, and they will understand who know that's fighting against the government. Because you will have a certain like little flag or something that's letting you know, or something that don't shoot at me. Don't shoot at me. Like if I saw George or Mike, and they was in a woods or something, and I was 100 yards away,
somebody coming for food, they're not gonna worry about if you're a part of a militia or anything.
They
else.
Will.
People
they
coming
will.
To hurt you. But
no,
people coming to hurt you, they're coming to hurt you.
Let me say something here.
It won't be the people. It will be the government doing it to you, not the people.
Right. But, Michael Hood, understand this. You don't necessarily have to be a member of a militia to be a part of a group to help affect change. It's not just the militia.
True.
Okay?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, simply put, if you want to see change happen, whether you're in a militia or not, people can come together. Now, like, let's say for the sake of this conversation, you, Nosh, Antoinette, Mike, Gunslinger, you're all part of an organized group. Not a militia, but just an organized group that want to try and effect change. Now, I'm on the outside looking in. I want to do this. I want to do something to help you, but I'm not a part of your group yet. You come to me and you ask, and you say to me, you tell me what's happening, what you're looking to see change, and ask me if I agree with what you're all a part of.
True.
If I'm of the same mindset, even though I'm not a part of your group yet, you're going to come to me and say, well, how about you come and join us, be a part of the solution.
Yeah, that's
way you affect change. That's
what we need, though. But George, do you think that we're going to have to go through like turmoil and go through a problem of what's going on in this country to bring that change?
But you don't have to wait for something to happen to do that.
But it seems like that's what's going to happen, though. It seems like we need another 9/11 to happen for us to come together. Because if you look at 9/11,
well, I hope
we
not.
Come together.
We don't need another catastrophe like 9/11 to happen to come together.
I think it will happen, George.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, George.
I understand that the possibility. Listen, I've been saying it since 9/11 happened, that another one's on the horizon. When is it going to happen? Nobody knows for sure. I don't know for sure. But it is.
Yeah,
but
I
it's
definitely
out there,
don't
and it's
know.
Going to happen.
It's going to happen with Lindsey
Graham.
But
what I'm saying is, why wait until it happens to do something? That's
yeah,
what
yeah,
I'm saying.
You're right about that. You're right
you
about
don't
that, too.
Wait until
right.
something happens to do something. You organize people and you start the ball rolling, so to curtail or to prevent that event from happening, if you can.
But George, you know what? That sounds like we was living in a fairy tale. But when it comes to Americans don't want to hear that. So they'd rather if something happened first before we even talk about that. That's what I kind of. I mean, I agree with you, but I don't agree with you because I know like Americans don't care about anything till it happens to them. Like.
But in order to let people know that the possibility exists, if you get people, you know, it's like a preacher in a church.
I ain't gonna shoot nobody, mom. I'm sorry. I got somebody in my yard, mom. I ain't gonna shoot him, man. I'll shoot him in the kneecap. I'm sorry, man. Somebody in my yard. But nah, go ahead, George. Go ahead. Keep talking, George.
What I'm saying is, in order to prevent something from happening, people have to be organized. And how do you do that? Well, the same way a pastor in a church organizes the congregation to do something within the church, the same thing applies to people in the community. you organize the people in the community by getting them together. And you don't, and when you do that, you're saying to them, look, we're not, let's not wait until the inevitable happens. We know the possibility is out there. We know it's coming, but we should be prepared for it so that we're not caught unaware. And if we can organize and get together, maybe working together, we can stop it. Do you see what I'm saying? You don't wait. It's like you don't wait for the store to run out of milk before you go down and try and get a gallon of milk. You go when you know the store has the milk on the shelf. I know it's a strange analogy, but in all honesty, listen, I was an NCO, okay? Planning is part of what I did. I planned contingency after contingency after contingency after contingency, because I knew that if, in order to do the job correctly, I had to have a contingency plan in place in case something went hinky, something went awry. So organizing the people helps you to have people in that core group that can branch out and organize more people. And that group can organize more people. And it begins to grow so that if, and I'm saying a big two-letter word here, if something is going to happen, there's a good possibility that you can stop it from happening, or at the very least, be fully prepared for it so you're not caught with your pants down around your ankles. Thus the contingency. That's why you organize. You organize a small group, and then they branch out and organize a bigger group and a bigger group. It doesn't take rocket science to figure out how to do that.
George, how much percentage would that be? 5% of people?
You start, okay, let's say you've got a group of 20 people. You start with a group of, say, 20 people. You go 5%. You try and organize and recruit more, at least 5% more people. And then that group organizes another 5%. And as it keeps happening, as the group grows, you have you have a grassroots movement starting out. And it's almost inevitable that grassroots movement, once organized properly, can in some way affect change.
But George, man, how would they affect change when their lights are cut off and they don't have light for 2 or 3 weeks? How would they even act? There's no gas stations, there's no grocery stores, anything. How would they act? And most people don't even know how to hunt.
That's why you plan. Again, remember what I said about my being an NCO. I always planned. I had the main plan. Then I had a contingency, backed by a contingency, backed by another contingency. You plan for the worst case scenario. You plan for the worst case scenario. So okay, let's say you live in an area where in a house where you can set up, say, solar panels or even a generator. Okay. Well, guess what? Your group works together to help you get that thing in place.
Right.
So if you have to switch to a generator system, you can. Now, your neighbor doesn't have a generator,
but
someone else does.
So what if the kerosene runs out, George? What do you do when the kerosene runs out after that?
But this is what I'm saying. You plan for these possibilities.
But how
and
long
you
will
make
your kerosine
sure
last,
you
though?
Have before
well, would it last
it was
for how many months?
Happened.
How many months will your kerosene last? What, 3 or 4 months? Last for 2 weeks? So you mean you must gonna have gallons of gasoline or kerosene to hold down your to have power?
But
so
that's
power
why
is
you plan. You work and you plan and you organize and you get the supplies you need. And you plan for the worst case scenario, meaning you plan for months down the road.
George,
You don't just plan for a couple of weeks.
Can you plan for people that, let's say you live in the woods now, and you have guys, you have women and children that haven't ate in 3 weeks, but they see your generator up and they see lights, and they're coming run up on your land and try to take you over. So what would you do when they try to come and take you over there, and they haven't had food or nothing and like that, but you have your generator going for like a couple of weeks? How would you survive yourself? What would you do?
That's why you organize a core group of people, and you have supplies enough to handle any contingency.
But what if you don't have people that doesn't agree with you, and they're saying that they want to take what you have? So how?
Well,
would you
then they got a problem up? Because they're the ones that, if they didn't plan, if they didn't organize, and they didn't work on this, and they don't agree with what you're saying. Well, you know what? That's their problem. You got to worry about. You know what? I'm wasting my time.
So, George, is it wrong for me killing them if they run up on my spot? Is it wrong for me killing them? Is it wrong for me giving them death?
I'm done talking about this. I really am.
No,
I'm not getting through.
No, it's real. Understand, George. If they run up on me and they have guns and they try to shoot at me, is it wrong for me killing them?
If that's the case, then you have to defend yourself. That's understandable.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
That's understandable. You're talking about a situation where if you're under attack and you have the means to defend yourself and your family, you do that. You don't just sit there and let them overrun your position. Common sense tells me that.
Because, you know, I mean,
I didn't have to be a soldier to know that.
Sometimes I have a heart for people, man. It's something like that. I would give them food or water, but if they run up on me and try to like be a forceful with it, then I can't give you no food or water, man. I mean, I have to shoot you, man. It's like I give you a third strike. You got 3 strikes or you're out. You can come up to me and you can try to be like, if you want food or water, I'll give you food or water. But if you come up to me and you want more than anything like that, I'm going to have to shoot you, man. I will really have to take you down. But, I mean, because there's going to be a lot of crazy folks out here in America, man. Y'all think it's going to be like Mary Poppins. It's going to be Mary Poppins or like damn Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. It's not going to be
like
that.
Dude, I'm not, partner, I'm not
saying
that.
I don't think anyone's expecting that.
Oh,
it's
going to
be massive chaos.
I'm done here.
Please don't be done, George.
I mean, I'm just trying to get it, George. I mean, everybody's got to be ready, man. Everybody can talk their noise on Blog Talk Radio, but when the internet shuts down and everything cut off and there ain't no power in the streets, and when your power has been out for 4 or 5 weeks and there ain't no food to go to the grocery store, how is people going to eat? And you know, most people are going to sit in their damn house for like 2 or 3 days before they even go to the grocery store. They're going to like, oh, the power come on. The power will be back on in another 3 or 4 days. It'll be on there. Come here, Billy. Billy, you know the power is going to be on in the next 3 days. No, the power
ain't
coming
on. If the power goes out
in
my house, the first thing I do is go to the store and make sure I pick up enough supplies to tide me over. And that includes,
yeah,
not limited to, containers, bags of ice, canned goods, anything that's non-perishable. And I make damn sure I've got what I need to tide me over, hopefully, until the power comes back on. But if it turns out where it doesn't happen, I know how to hunt, I know how to fish, and I know how to use 2 sticks to rub together.
So George, if you go to the grocery store, there ain't no food left in the grocery store, what would you do then?
Hunt, fish.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
A lot of
I'd go hunting. I'd go fishing. I've got a fishing pole. I've got a tackle box, and I've got them. I know how to hunt without a weapon.
So do you feel sorry about the people that's in the cities and they don't even know how to hunt? All they worry about is their iPads.
Of course,
Facebook.
I feel bad for the people down in city situations that don't have those skills. Of course, I do. But you see, I'm the kind of person who would teach them how to. I'm the kind of person who would go to them and say, "Look, you don't have to live in the dark. You can't if there ain't no food on the shelf. Come with me. I'll teach you how to hunt. I'll teach you how to fish, and I'll teach you how to survive."
How can you teach them? The first thing I do is I check out if they had a decent watch, any jewelry or something like that, and I'd usually, so, if they had a Rolex,
so Mike, Mike and George, when all chaos breaks out, how can you even teach them when you're trying to get your family safe? You don't even have time to even teach nobody because you're in chaos right now. You're trying to get food. You're trying to get water. You're trying to get kerosene. You're trying to get gasoline. You're trying to get food. You don't have time to go teach nobody.
So you know what I end up
with? Michael, can I say something?
Michael Hood, I'll tell you what. Based on that kind of fear, I'd toss a rope over a tree limb and hang myself.
Yeah, Mike, I think you're overthinking it. You gotta, don't worry. You're getting.
No, I try. You know, George is right though. I do the same thing, George. But you know what? But that this will come to America. It's coming to America. It will happen, man. This is going to happen, man. People need to be ready for this, man. This is not a game. This is not a joke. A lot of people will die, man. How many? 300 million people? Out of 300 million people, there will be 20 million people left in America. And out of them 20 million people, they will go with the fucking they will go with the dark side. Out of 300 million people that lives in America now, this is all the people that's going to die, man. Did you hear about the constitutional that they ordered 40,000 guillotines? Guillotines now. The government ordered 40,000 guillotines in 2011. They ordered to cut your damn head off because you don't believe in Jesus Christ. They're going to cut your head off because you don't believe in the true Christ. Islam is going to be the main one that runs this country. And Obama is the man that is part of Islam. He's the main man that's bringing it in. If you look at Henry Kissinger, you look at George Soros, and you look at Jacob Rothschild, and you look at all these guys that are political main powers, are saying that Obama is the main man that they need to bring in the new world order, man. It's right in your fucking face. How? What does it take? God damn. It pisses me off that people sit here and talk all fucking day and don't see it in your fucking face. Damn. And you wonder why America's going to be caught up and be rounded up and go to internment camps. You wonder why that is. Because America is so fucking dumb in their fucking face because they can't realize that the government
Okay. You know what? If you know what?
Oh my
Antoinette,
God.
I gotta go. I'm not gonna sit here.
I'm not gonna sit here and listen to that kind of insulting
behavior.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm out of here. Good night, everybody.
I know, but Michael,
hold on, George.
Michael,
don't take off.
You have to calm down.
George.
He hung up. I'm sorry that he did. But Michael, you know, you have to work within your community now, and that's the only thing that we can do. You know, is to try to work within our communities now. And if you feel that, you know, this is going to happen, we know it's going to happen, but we can't change it. But what we can do is prepare for it and tell others, you know, and hope that they'll tell others so that they get prepared. Other than that, then, you know, I guess it's almost like the Hunger Games. I mean, I don't know.
It looks like Ron Reck is on the chat room. Is that?
No, I didn't want George to cut off or nothing, but this is the truth that how America is right now. America is falling to a great depression. It's called a greater depression that was in 1929. This is going to be something that people couldn't even understand. You know, I saw a video the other day, a guy in Georgia, and they had the UN. They had two trucks now with eight trucks with United Nations trucks, and these trucks were brand new, riding on the back of an 18-wheeler now, brand new, all white, with the United Nations, UN on the trucks now, brand new, down in Augusta, Georgia. Brand new. Why would damn America need brand new United Nations trucks to be on the back of an 18-wheeler to come to America? Come on now, man. I mean, I know people don't want to understand this, and they think it's a joke, but this is not a joke, man. Because it's about to hit hard, man. It's coming. We probably have about another 5 more years left. Because I mean, Obama is trying to push it that he can be the king of America.
Michael, it's being pushed, man.
Could you listen to me for a moment, please?
Michael. Okay. Listen.
It's whatever y'all
Michael,
say,
listen.
Man.
Wait a minute, honey. Let me say something, okay, please? Michael. First off, you're speaking to the choir. Everyone on this line, and, you know, we all know what's coming. We cannot change what other people are doing or not doing. You know, what you can do, you're young, you know, even those older ones, is, you know, reason why George has shows, you know, reason why Ron has shows and others have shows, is to tell people what is going on. And then it's up to that individual to prepare.
Well,
now,
yeah,
yes, it's going to be great casualties. But the only thing, you know, you tell people, you tell your neighbors, you know, you start making your supplies now and hope that your neighbors will do it too, you know. Get together within
right
your neighborhood. But, Michael, there's something else, sweetheart,
right
that we can do.
Antoinette, I have militias right now. I have militias in my state right now. I don't talk on Blog Talk Radio. I just talk on Blog Talk just to give a little something. Now, real talk.
Mike, a lot of guys, if they, I know there's a lot of fear out there. It's creating a lot of paranoia. People mentioned about, they've brought this up before, about the UN vehicles. Oh my God, there's UN vehicles in Georgia. What are we doing? The military vehicles. They're moving them. Oh my God. I just put a link on the chat room. Do you see it?
Oh, thank you, Michael.
But if you look at it,
I see.
There's a major company that exports and they sell internationally,
yeah.
And they recondition military vehicles. They sell brand new military vehicles overseas. It's a big outfit, and they're in Georgia, and that's what they specialize in. So these vehicles could have been reconditioned, or they could have been brand new ones that were sold to the UN that are getting shipped out. That's how they ship them.
You're right.
The minute they see them, everybody freaks out for nothing. They're overthinking it, and I'm blaming the government for all the fear that they're creating out there, because then people, they get out of hand instead of sitting down, thinking it out, you know, and everybody, it's the whole thing. Blog Talk Radio is covered with it.
Mike, you know what's going on, Mike.
No, I know, but we can't overreact like stuff like this when they talk about, because you brought it up, about the vehicles,
the
UN.
Yeah. I tell everybody around here, it's no to get crazy or nothing like that, but we will know what the time is for us to react. We will know the time. The time is coming, though, but it hasn't happened yet. It might be 3 or 4 years from now. We know we're on standby. We're on standby. We're waiting. We're waiting for the collapse, because we know that there will be a collapse in America. There will be a collapse. So people can say that it won't be a collapse, but it will be a collapse in America.
Yeah.
Michael. Okay, y'all, we're down to 10 minutes, and we're going to run out. And I do not want to close out like that.
All right.
So...
Everybody's fine.
Okay. But as you know, you're speaking to people that already do know it. Fortunately, this is archived, and people, you know, who catch the archives later will be able to hear this information also.
Right.
But, sweetheart, the only thing I can tell you is that, you know, you do the best that you can, and, you know, you hope for the best, and you prepare for the worst.
You know what
it is?
We can't let the stuff get us down and let paranoia take over.
Yeah.
We can't.
Everybody can do the best they can.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I live in South Carolina. Everybody lives in other states. You're going to have to do, when the shit hits the fan, you're going to have to deal with your own state. You're going to have to deal with
your
own community.
And with your own communities, you know. So, and that's where your work is. You know, you work within, you know. So, you know, you work within your community and then let it spread, you know, and that way, you know, hopefully everybody can, you know, when stuff does happen, then, you know, okay, well, I got this, I got that, you know, you're able to barter with something, or just, you know, look, when it first happens and the power goes out, then, look, we're having a community barbecue. You see?
Hey, we saw it in Los Angeles. When the power went out and everything happened during the earthquake in Los Angeles, I mean, everybody in the neighborhood, we all got together, and we worked together. I mean, everybody was helping each other out.
Maybe I have 1,000 gallons of gasoline on me, hiding in the woods somewhere.
But Michael, that's wonderful. But what you see, you kept speaking about collectively. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, all of these people that are going to be killed, you know, people are going to be without food. I mean, and right now we're just, you know, we're making suggestions, just, you know, things that you can do. I mean,
day to day, day by day. You know? And
I pray for everybody, man. Just, I hear on Blog Talk Radio, man, just be prepared and be ready, man, because.
And I'll tell you what, there's not going to be any, if there's a natural disaster or something happens, I'll tell you what, there's no, you know, you'll see a lot of first responders. What do they have? They have families, too. You think they're not going to be with their families and watching and taking care of their families and their kids?
Yeah.
You think, I mean, a lot of people, they look at it wrong. They don't bring common sense into the equation. And they say, no, they're going to be, it's going to be martial law and they're going to be out shooting it. No, they're not. It's not. I mean, during the earthquake, during the riots, you didn't see anybody, man.
Well, Mike,
we didn't see cops for 3 days. We didn't see cops, nothing. And then they sent National Guard. None of them had bullets.
But, Mike, you know it's a Revolutionary War. You know, right now, if you came down from New York, came down here, if I went up and I had troops to come up in New York, you know we'll be troops. We'll be troops together now. We'll all come together.
I personally, honestly, don't think it'll ever get to that point. I really don't think it'll ever get to that point. I think if we had a president, not just Obama, say we get the next president out after Obama that's insane or that goes clinically insane while he's in office and starts issuing orders of, I want to bomb Chicago or something like that, somebody in the White House would manacle the son of a bitch and quietly take him out of office.
You'll go with Hillary Clinton? Hillary Clinton be the next president.
No, I don't think so. She's already burned. She caused so much anger with that Benghazi thing nationwide that even Ma and Pa Kettle wouldn't vote for her.
So
they're going to remember that. And they'd use it against her.
Thank you for using that, Mike.
Huh?
To y'all, who will be the next president after Obama?
I bet you right now there's been a lot of meetings going on and behind the scenes on both the Democrat and the Republican side, both of them, and they're weighing what the options are. And I don't think they've even made a decision because they've got until 2016. So they're waiting to see what happens through the end of this year and what happens next year. What the names are.
I'm a vote on a nonsense ass person that's going to get my vote. I'm going to give my vote over to a non-dumbass person that is going to do the same thing that happened since 1776. So, I mean, that means I'm going to get my same vote over that ain't never changed. So that means I'm going to go ahead and vote. I'm going to vote. Ain't nothing going to damn change, man. See, our young folks, we're not playing that anymore, man. We don't care about voting anymore because the vote doesn't fucking count, man.
Excuse me, but
that
Michael, watch your language, honey, okay? I've heard a lot of cursing tonight. Please, can I have a little break?
It doesn't count, though. It doesn't count.
Michael, you heard us talk about this.
Y'all got to wake up, man.
Michael, we know these things. Sweetheart, we know these things.
Yeah, Mike, you got to calm down.
We are $27 trillion in debt.
Mike, you're letting them win right now. You know that? You're letting them win right now because you're so angry, so upset, that it's pouring out of you.
Yeah.
And it's pouring out. You got to calm down. You're letting them win. All of this is getting you to the point that you're so frustrated right now, you don't even know where to start. That's how mad it's got you.
Yeah.
Don't let it get to you.
I have contingency plans right now. I have contingency plans back
then. Michael, that's good, sweetheart. That is good. Look, y'all.
You've got to calm down.
5 minutes
chill.
Is going to cut off on us. So I'm going to play a song, and I'm going to thank y'all for coming. Michael.
Yeah, and guys, I got work tomorrow, so I got to get up early. Look what time it is, almost 3 in the morning here. Jeez.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, it was great talking with you all.
Yes,
Mike, Antoinette,
it was.
I'll talk to you guys later. You have a quiet night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, have a good night, y'all.
All right. And Mike, have a good night.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, boy.